This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run!
Fires down the middle.
It is intercepted by Micah Hyde! Intercepted! Tre Day! Tre'Davious White!
He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there! McCoy cuts to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hey, welcome into the John Murphy Show. I'm Donald Jones, sitting in Murph's chair today. We are joined by a special guest, Lorenzo Alexander. Lorenzo, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
You good?
Yeah, it's a good day. Good day, but kind of sad. My mom just went home. She was out here for a week while me and my wife were in the Super Bowl helping us with the babies.
That's how that works.
So, yeah. I mean, you have to be able to fly people out, you know, when you have the ability to. So it's great. She doesn't get to see the grandbabies all the time, so it's well worth it to be able to fly her out and hang out for a week and spend some time with the grandbabies.
Now, when y'all go on vacation, and once again, it's the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, but when you guys go on vacation, do you take her with you?
Not all the time. It depends on the situation and where we're going, because that can get expensive, obviously. You know, you're paying for another room, paying for another flight. But special occasions, especially like when we do like Pro Bowl, we brought her out. Sometimes when we go to the NFLPA meeting, we went over to Hawaii, we've taken her just because it's so far. Me and my wife want to spend some quality time together. Instead of, you know, maybe doing a babysitter there, it's just an easy way for my mom to have additional time with her grandbabies, because most families live in the same city.
Right.
Obviously, it's unconventional with us just based on, you know, my career and where I'm living at now. And then hopefully one day I'll be able to take her to the Super Bowl. She'll definitely be on that trip too.
Yeah,
you know, so
yeah.
That's something in the future that we hopefully be able to obtain before I decide to retire.
Well, speaking of the Super Bowl, we're going to talk to you about the Super Bowl. See, you went to the Super Bowl. Obviously, you did the Radio Rose. We had you on the show last week. I saw you on NFL Network Saturday.
Yeah.
Suited and booted.
I had to keep it fresh now.
Yeah, we talk about that a little bit. We're going to talk to your brother today, Austin Alexander. We're going to talk to him at about 12:30 about he committed.
He committed. Fresno State.
Fresno State. Now, what did it come down to? What schools?
It was between UCF, Purdue, and Fresno State, ultimately. And Oregon State kind of got in there late. And it's crazy. Oregon State and Fresno State, I have personal connections to. So those schools were kind of on the top, and he wanted to go back west anyway.
He wanted to go. And where's he been, in Connecticut?
St. Thomas More. So, I just call it New England, but I know that's an area and not necessarily a state. So I don't know exactly, but I want to say it's Connecticut.
Like, I don't know where my brother
is. Yeah, I just know St. Thomas More.
In the Northeast, somewhere over
there.
New
England.
Yeah, somewhere in New England. So he wanted to go back home, basically.
Yeah, that's what it came down to. He wanted to be back that way. I don't think he really likes the cold weather or the snow. So,
all right.
You don't get that in Fresno.
You don't get cold weather at all? It doesn't get cold up in the Bay.
That's central. I mean, but Fresno is not the Bay. Fresno is more central California, starting to move down to Southern California. So it's actually more farmland. It actually gets pretty hot and consistently hot out there.
Oh, all right. So, he wanted to go back out. All right. So we're going to talk to him at 12:30, trying to figure out still if he's supposed to be in class. I don't know how this is going to work out. If he's going to be pulled from class, if his teacher is going to come out and send him to detention because he's out there on the phone or something like that.
You know, some things are worth coming out of class for, though. I mean, obviously, education is important, but certain things you got to miss. I mean, it just is what it is. And how many times you're going to be able to get on the phone with your brother and be interviewed?
True.
You know, because you never know. He may never make it to the league. So you might as well relish this moment while you have, enjoy it, and take all the perks that come with being a highly, you know, wanted recruit.
You got to take that detention, in-school suspension, whatever it is that happens, you got to take that.
If they don't understand, there's something wrong with that school, man. They need to get on. They know who bring all that money in.
Yeah, right. Ross Tucker. You know Ross
Tucker? Yeah, me and Ross played with the Redskins. Obviously, he's made a great transition into the broadcasting world, kind of the footprint that I want to follow. So it'd be great to have him on the show today as well.
Well, at some point, we're going to get Ross Tucker on the show, and we'll figure that out. As you know, sometimes we kind of wing this thing. So today we're going to wing this thing with Ross Tucker. He's going to call us, and we're going to talk about some league-wide stuff. Obviously, the whole thing with Josh McDaniels and how he pulled out. Talk about the Super Bowl. Obviously, today is the parade. I want to talk to you about the parade, the Super Bowl parade down in Philly. Looks like hundreds of thousands of people out there, cold, standing there, just waiting on the team to ride by, which is interesting in itself.
Yeah, it's not as as passionate as I thought it would be. Maybe because I'm not in the crowd.
Yeah.
I just know what Buffalo would look like. I mean, right, well, you know.
I think they kind of shot their load after the game that night. I know you've seen video of that.
I've seen it, but that's just one night, man. Buffalo got some longevity, so they got a lot of energy to spend if we get a parade.
Yeah.
In Buffalo? Could you imagine that?
I mean.
The tables that would be all over the place.
Yeah. Broken.
The shirt. I didn't see anybody shirtless there. I mean,
you didn't, right? Everybody
I
did.
Yeah, clothes on. Maybe it's just.
They're doing
I don't
it
know.
All wrong, man. And that's supposed
and
to be a sports city.
It's surprising for Philly. For Philly, yeah. It's surprising because they fans are getting rowdy.
Right. They're doing it all wrong down there. You're going to have to call. You know anybody on the team down there? Yeah, Corey Graham.
Yeah, Corey Graham. Darby.
You got to tell them they did
Frank
it all
Wright,
wrong.
You know.
They did it all wrong. Y'all did it all wrong down there. Let us show you how we do it up here in Buffalo. But what would it be like for you to be up on a bus like that riding through any city, but especially here in Buffalo where you know the fans are passionate?
It would be crazy. I can't even imagine the feeling I'd be feeling. It would probably be like surreal, like an out-of-body type experience. You're like, man, we really did this?
Yeah.
You know, kind of setting in and up on the bus, but not really there. I can only imagine just the passion, the excitement, the energy you could feel, the things you would see. You know, it'd be, you know, tailgate on 100, you know? You know, because, you know, it'd just be disorderly. Yeah, I mean, and that's part of it, right? Yeah. You know, the fan base here has a very fun college atmosphere feel to it, and I know they would bring that out to the parade. Mm-hmm. And it would just be such a joyous day. So hopefully we'll be able to work to that next year. You know, as soon as that game was over, you know, I just texted some of the guys that are in this locker room now and was like, there's no reason why we shouldn't be in this game.
Yeah.
It's no reason. I mean, you know, you look at both teams. Obviously, we play against the Patriots. They beat us. You look at the Philadelphia Eagles and their talent level, we have that capability of doing it. And, you know, really it was from a defensive perspective, the guys that I texted, like, we could ride this thing all the way. Let's put a little bit more on our shoulders and try to rise up and do this thing because we obviously got in the playoffs this year, and I think we still have more in the tank. We can take it to another level.
Yeah, man, I used to think the same thing because we would lose, and obviously you guys made it to the playoffs this year, but we would – once the season was over, I'd go home and I'm watching the playoffs and I'm like, man, why are we not in the playoffs right now?
Right.
You know, like we have talent on this team. We shouldn't have lost as many games as we did. And then you start thinking back to the games that you lost and you're like, why do we lose that game? Like,
right.
How do we lose that game? Mm-hmm. And you start thinking about yourself. If I would have just made this play or that play, maybe we would have won that game. You
kind of
second guess yourself throughout the, you know, into the season. It's rough because you watching the playoffs and you're happy for your boys that are there, but you're upset that you're not there.
Right, yeah, and of course I felt that. And my main thought was, and I was talking to Micah yesterday about this, especially on defense, I don't think we really understood how good we were. Obviously, we had a lot of turnover last year. And even those first couple of games, you're like, man, we kind of good. Is this us?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think next year, just kind of coming into that season, we already have a foundation here. Guys will be stepping into a situation where we know how good we are. Now, let's everybody bring your game up another notch, jump on this bandwagon because we about to ride this thing out and kind of lead our team from a defensive standpoint. And I think that's going to be a big difference in us from year one to year two and winning some of those other games, especially in the middle of the season where we had, you know, three or four games where it felt like we couldn't stop anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of eliminate that, maybe take that down to one game.
Right.
And then you find yourself maybe with home field advantage, you know, maybe beating the Patriots and winning the division. Then the dynamic is way different because nobody wants to come here and play in December or January, especially in the playoff game. Because I didn't want to be in Minnesota. But up there, it's a dome. Down here, you don't have that luxury. it might be negative 20. And if you ain't used to that,
it's
a different
like,
type
yo,
of game.
As soon as you walk out of the tunnel.
Right. I don't know if you saw the Elshon Jeffrey. Somebody asked him a silly question. Like, you know, it's negative 20 outside. He's like, we're inside.
I did see that one.
If he came up here for that, he'd be like, I don't know. I might have to wear some extra clothes, get out there early.
Yeah.
Your mind start, you know, trying to figure things out. So, you know, that's what we want to be able to play for, to add that extra advantage for ourselves.
Yeah.
But that also starts early in the season, putting games in the bank. But like I said earlier, I think it's just understanding that we're capable of doing it. Mm-hmm. And I think before it's like, we're not quite sure, you know, kind of falling to some of that old coach that was here. And then, we are pretty good. Okay, we can do this thing.
All right, well, we're going to jump out of this conversation. We're going to get back into this, so don't tune out of this thing. But, you know, I got some sound from – some of my friends down in Rochester, right? And this is from back training camp.
Okay.
This is from WCMF, my boy Duffy down there with my girl Kimmy, the break room. Now, you were on the break room.
I was on the break
room. And they were talking about, they were really having some fun with you.
Okay.
talking about the LeSean McCoy charity softball event that he had.
Oh, wow. So you're going to bring this up out of nowhere? You didn't.
I'm just saying.
No, I'm just understanding. We had a conversation about the rundown. You know, we're professionals here.
It's on the rundown.
Yeah, is it? Nobody pointed it out to me. Oh, maybe because I didn't read. I guess you put it in the book.
You put it in the book
if you want nobody to find out about it. Okay. We discussed everything else, but we don't talk about this part. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. I'm sorry. Yes. My fault. I still don't see it. I see Lorenzo,
the
WCMF.
Right there in the middle. I'm just saying.
Okay. It doesn't say anything.
Well, you got to read. Okay. You went to Cal.
All right.
There's a stereotype about football players. We're trying to change this whole mindset of people thinking that we don't actually go to school for school.
Well, I have my degree. I don't know about nobody else.
I'm just saying.
You know, I have it.
Well, we have some sound. We have video. All right? We have video of the interview.
Okay, not of the –
This is you talking about the LeSean McCoy charity event back in training camp. Well, let's listen to this sound.
Okay, let's hear it. Mm-hmm.
All right, Lorenzo Alexander, Bills linebacker, hanging out in the country suite hot seat. Kimmy and I were hanging out with you at the LeSean McCoy celebrity softball game.
Home
you were hitting home runs.
Yes.
Yep. Kimmy made an observation this morning that I didn't want to say to your face, so I'm going to allow Kimmy to make that observation.
You had the full dad uniform on. Because all
the dad uniform?
All the other guys had shown up.
Oh, was I prepared?
Yes, you were prepared.
I'm a baseball player. I mean, I played that growing up.
You had the baseball pants on.
Yeah.
You had
I wouldn't call it dad. Why is that dad? Because
don't look at me.
Though.
She said it. That wasn't me.
The young guys are in like gym shorts and you know.
That's
because
they
like
don't
t-shirts.
Know no better. That's why I'm out here. That's why I'm on the team. I'm trying to show you how you show up and how you play baseball.
You sound like my dad. You got to
be. You definitely sound like somebody's dad.
I'll own that. I'm a grown man. I'm 35. If you got 20-somethings out there, they don't know any better, don't understand.
Did you have on a full uniform?
I had on baseball pants and the jersey that LeSean gave me.
Well, we have it.
Yes, and I look like I'm about to go do some damage right there.
You're about to go do some damage.
That's when a professional shows up.
That's what I'm talking about.
Now, you know, when Bryce Harper shows up to the ballpark, that's how he shows up. That's what I want to aspire to be.
Okay, I mean, that's
charity or no charity. When I
inspire, you know what? You're inspiring change. That's what I'm talking
exactly.
about. And you're trying to show the young guys.
I'm a competitive.
You look good out there.
I'm a competitive person.
You're a competitive person.
I'm going to show up and do my best. I'm going to wear the uniform, everything. Because I never know. I might need to slide. I ain't going to have no shorts on sliding.
Did you have a baseball?
You know what I mean? When you go to a hoop charity game, you come with some Jordans or some your nice shoes. You don't show up in no boots, even though it's cold outside. Right? Do you wear sweatpants when you in a charity basketball game?
Nah, you don't. You wear shorts.
The issue is most of these brothers, they never played no baseball.
Because they weren't athletes.
They just was football players and that's it. I was multidimensional. I played all three, so I know how to dress for all of them.
Yeah.
And I was prepared. So that's all I'm going to say. Dad, I'll take it if that's what you want to call it.
Well, I don't know if you've ever had a celebrity softball event.
No, I haven't.
You haven't?
No.
Well, maybe if you do in the future. I know you do a lot of things for your Aces Foundation.
Yeah.
But if you do in the future, this is how, if I get invited, I would actually come to the event, you know, and this is how you really look. You're supposed to look out there, you know.
All
what
right,
I mean?
That looked like I mean, I know that's not the Pittsburgh Pirates, but
no, it's not the Pittsburgh Pirates. It's a minor league team in New Jersey, because you know I played Triple A ball when I was done after I retired.
I didn't know that.
But you see the swing though. You see the swing.
Okay,
on
I don't
the
know
back
where's the ball though. I don't know.
The ball was already. You would have saw it in the glove. No, it wasn't a pop up. It was actually.
You might have swung early too. I might have been an off speed pitch. So don't let's not. You got to show the whole thing, man. Let me show a clip. Don't show a pitcher. Are you just swinging? That might have been your warm-up swing.
Well, I don't even know. I don't know how you did in the softball game. What were your stats in the softball game?
We didn't even play. It was raining. They wouldn't let us get on the field because
Was it like lightning and stuff?
No, it was just real soggy. They didn't want us to mess it up with our cleats and stuff. So,
you escaped.
Actually, they had the home run derby. Now, let me say this. I didn't do as well as I should have. The guys that showed up, Jerry did really well. And then Corner, we traded him to Carolina. Help me out. SC.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Why can I not think of his name?
Yeah, I can't
think of his name. I know you're talking about.
Yeah. He did really well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he was jacking him. So, but they had the guy that was throwing softballs up there. I mean, big, red, beach ball type of pitches.
Yeah.
So when I get to my turn, for some reason, they subbed this guy out.
Really?
And sub in.
That's because you came looking prepared. Lorenzo knows how to do this.
That plays for the U.S. national team.
Ooh.
So he's not throwing no longer just give me home run balls. He's throwing like real pitches.
Right.
And you know, I didn't hit any. But then after, I said, no. I know I'm better than this. Mm-hmm. It was over. I lost, whatever. Okay, I didn't do well. I had the original pitcher come back out. Hey, let me hit something. Let me just make sure I still got it. I can't leave feeling the way I feel. So he pitches me a couple, and I hit like four or five. I said, okay, I'm good. Okay, I know I still got it. I'm good. Next mm-hmm. year, then, I'm going to have to show out. So hopefully LeSean does it again this year. We go down to Rochester because it was a great crowd out there. Just the weather didn't cooperate.
Right.
So anybody that's listening to this, definitely look out for it. You know, LeSean McCoy's foundation, look it up. I know he's probably going to end up doing it. I think we did it in May. Drive to Rochester and have a great time. It was a definitely fun event.
Was Kyle there?
No, Kyle was not there. You know, he's not coming back for that. I don't think he was. I think he was a week off. He's down. He goes to Louisiana. They come back early, you know, get away from your family. It's kind of hard.
You know,
but he's an athlete.
I was in a home run derby. Now, we don't have this video. I was in a home run derby with Kyle, and we were up in the dome up in Toronto, the Blue Jay Stadium.
Oh, nice.
So it's Kyle, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Scott Chandler, the tight end, and myself. I can't remember if anybody else went. We get on the bus. We go up there. We use the team's bats because they were out there doing batting practice, right? So we get out there, and Kyle just starts jacking them.
Right.
And I'm like, yo, this dude is just strong. You know? Yeah. Just strong-arming pitches. Like, come on, man. What is going on? So I ended up hitting. I hit one up in the second deck. I hit one right over the gate. But Kyle hit like four or five of them mugs. And it was like, man, this is not even right.
Right.
That dude is an athlete. Yeah, he can do a lot of different things.
He can kick. Obviously play baseball, play football. I know he can hoop. He's a wrestler.
Yeah.
Probably can throw the shot put. You know? he does everything. This is some guys that you look at him like, I don't know. But he get out there and is a lot more explosive and athletic and agile. We all know he can play ping pong. He's like the king ping pong. Him and Nick go back and forth. Nah. But I think he's dominated Nick over the tenure Nick has been here. But I mean, he does a little bit of everything. It's pretty impressive. And the guy we couldn't think of was Kevon Seymour.
Kevon Seymour. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because people look at football players and they're like, man, these guys are unbelievable athletes, and don't even realize like some of these dudes are like unbelievable football players. They're not unbelievable athletes. It's a difference.
There's
a big difference.
And I know a guy.
You know a guy.
A guy I grew up with. The sweating. I mean, you're bringing in a towel on air. Okay.
On air. I mean, it happens like that.
I think
sometimes.
I'm just shiny. You know,
you might be. But I remember when I was playing here.
Put the camera on me, huh? Not go to Donald while he talks and let me wipe my head off. That don't make no sense. What they doing back there, man? That's probably Jay. Who controls it?
No, Jeff actually controls the cameras. So that's Jeff.
Oh, okay, Jeff.
Jeff is sitting right here close to the door. He's the one that controls the cameras. Yeah. Jay might have told him to do that.
Right.
You know how Jay operates.
That's probably what happened. So I'm going to put that on JJ.
So
then.
when I was playing here, there were a few guys on the team that couldn't swim.
Oh, I'm one of them guys.
And really?
I can swim well enough to save my life or go in the pool and get my kid out of the pool. But I'm not swimming laps.
Oh, okay. Well, no, they couldn't swim.
At all. Oh, okay.
And they also couldn't do anything else. We went to batting cages. We were out in Arizona where Ryan Fitzpatrick lives.
Right.
And we're like, come on, man. First, we're playing golf. So to watch these jokers play golf was just Ryan Fitzpatrick has a nice house. He has a golf pad. He's like right in front of some mountains. And he has a nice little green area where you can hit golf balls out up into the mountains.
Nice.
Off of his patio. So a bunch of these guys get on. I'm not going to say any names. I don't want to do that to them.
You know, I'm going
to
call out my guy in a minute.
Well, you know, Naaman Roosevelt is one of them.
Okay, there you go.
Naaman Roosevelt was from Buffalo, so it's probably people here that that know him personally. So he gets out there, and he can't even nowhere close to a golf ball. Now, golf is a hard sport to play.
Right.
I'm not even going to lie.
You got to
kind of know.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's legit.
Then we go into the batting cages, and I remember Fred Jackson took a picture of Naaman in the batting cages, and the ball was already past Naaman, and he hadn't even started to swing yet. It's the funniest thing ever. Yeah. I was like, Naaman, what are you doing? And Naaman was good in football. He's good in basketball, video games. Everything else? Uh-uh.
Horrible.
There's no other sports that he could play. It's the funniest thing ever.
That's crazy. So my guy is Andre Carter.
Andre Carter, okay.
Number seven pick in, 2001 draft, 2000 draft. probably the best athlete combine-wise, statistically, I've ever been around. I mean, ran 4.3, broad jumped 11 feet, you know, bench pressed, you know, the world, flexible, just, you know, does some martial arts stuff. But when it came to just throwing a ball.
Yeah.
Now, we're not even talking about playing a sport. Just throwing
the ball.
Ball.
Yeah.
It looked like, and I you know, the commercial that came out, it might have been even a Super Bowl commercial where this kid is playing catch and he's throwing the ball. You're like, why is this dude throwing the ball like this?
Mm-hmm.
And then it pans to his dad. It's like, oh, that's why he's throwing it. It looked horrible. Unathletic. Same arm, same foot, like D lineman stuff. You know, it's right arm, left foot.
Right.
He going right arm, right foot. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Don't do it. You're embarrassing yourself.
Put the ball down. Yeah, put it down. Don't throw it anymore.
Because this was like the dude I looked up to. You know, he was at Cal. He helped recruit me. I worked out with him. So this is the guy I was like, man, if I want to make it to the league, I need to kind of emulate myself like him. But when I was playing with the Redskins, I was like, put that down. You messing up my image of who I think you are, dude.
Put it down. Like, man, I can't look at you the same no more.
Not at all. I hope his son Quincy doesn't pick that up, because it is horrendous.
Yeah, that's bad, man. When you see guys that are such good football players, or basketball players, and they can't do anything else, you're like, what happened? You know, I mean, is that all you did your entire life? You can't do anything else. It's the funniest thing ever.
Right. That's why my kids will play multiple sports.
We
play
soccer,
baseball, all that.
I'm not a big fan on, and you're seeing this a lot more now, and we're going to get back into some football talk here, but I'm not a big fan of kids focusing on one sport when they're young.
Yeah.
When they're young. And you get to high school, it's all
right.
If you want to do that in high school.
You start cutting something down.
But these kids are doing it at 7, 8, 9 years old, focusing on one sport. And I'm like, yo,
why?
Come on. Yeah. You know, it's so different now, because when we were young, we were out in the streets playing different things.
Right, yeah.
Even just riding bikes and doing stuff like that. Now it's like AAU basketball, AAU baseball, where they're traveling all around. They don't even have an opportunity to play anything
else.
Yeah,
and it's literally year round.
Yes.
I mean, it's crazy to me, because – why would I want how do you know what your kid is passionate about if they only do one thing, or what they really are great at?
Right.
You may be hindering. They may be great at another sport that's going to take them way further.
Yeah.
But even if they are in their best sport, the other sports attribute different characteristics and skill sets that's going to help them in their main sport anyway.
Right.
I mean, you know, so whether it's basketball and condition, or soccer and hand-eye coordination, or foot and eye coordination, change of direction. You know, all those different things that you may have in a different sport, and that I have used as a football player.
Football, yeah.
You know, and that's why you see, like, a lot of these basketball players, especially on the receiver side, able to transition. And they use a lot of those techniques, or even running the ball. Like, you see Shady, he crossing cats over.
Yeah.
I mean, just different those movements. didn't get that from playing football. They got that from hooping when they was growing up.
Yeah.
So those type of tools that you want to have your kids exposed to.
Yeah, man. I think parents are definitely doing their kids a disservice by having them play one sport. And we got on this conversation because we started talking about you and your softball game and looking like a dad. But it's all good. You
look
good
like a
out
baseball
there.
Player.
Looking like a baseball. All right. So looking like a baseball
Did you look
player.
Like a dad?
I probably did. Somebody probably said that. You're like a dad out here. My son was at the game.
Right.
Daddy, what's up, man? Right. You know, so I probably did look like a dad out there. No, but
Fair enough.
To get back into some football talk. So we just got through the Super Bowl, and the Eagles – won the Super Bowl with Nick Foles, a backup quarterback, as the Super Bowl MVP. He ends up the Super Bowl. He goes on an unbelievable run.
Right.
Beats the Vikings.
I'm sorry. Can I just catch? He's a starting quarterback.
He has been a starting quarterback.
And he started it. And it ain't like he just came in off the bench.
Right.
He was a starter in the Super Bowl. I just hate when people, and this is not just, it's not you. I'm just saying in general, they trying to demean, I think it's more demeaning. Oh, this is a backup quarterback, and he's playing. Oh my gosh, how is he doing this?
Yeah.
No, he was a starter in this league, and just went to a scheme and a coaching staff that did some things that really mess up his rhythm, because he balled when he was in Philly. I was a victim of it, and I saw it firsthand. And now he's getting his opportunity again and balling out. So he's a starter quarterback in my mind in this league, and a lot of people are going to be trying to get him, trade for him, and give up picks for him in this offseason. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
So, I see you got real passionate about that. You
people do the same thing to me all the time. I can't stand it.
So he was a starter in this league. And now we've been going back and forth on quarterback situation here, what do they need to do if they need to draft one. People are like, you need to trade for Nick Foles after he won Super Bowl MVP and killed it there, throwing dimes.
Elite.
And so we've been talking about quarterback here, and so the question came up, what's the right way, in your opinion, to build a roster? Do you need to get the quarterback first? Because people are saying you need to trade away your entire draft and get the quarterback. If you feel like that's your guy, trade up and get your guy. It doesn't matter. Trade away your first two round picks. I mean, your two first round picks, first round pick next year, trade it all the way to get your guy. Because you're talking about going from 2021 to top five to get one of these guys, and that's hard to do. So you do that, or you trade for Nick Foles, and then you build your roster around that. But going back to the draft, what, in your opinion, what's the right model to build a roster?
For me, and it's pros and cons on both sides, but I think the best way to go about it is you want to have a team in place, much like the Los Angeles Rams have. Mm-hmm. They have a great defense, have some offensive weapons, have a good offensive line. You got to have a good offensive line. And then be able to insert a guy, especially if he's a young guy you're about to draft.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to see the David Carr instance where you draft a guy and he's getting hit all the time, has no help, or can't get the ball to his guys. And then you wear him out and he's no good for the rest of the time he's in the league. So I would definitely like it, because then it's an easier transition. So I'd definitely like to see a team be built up first, and then you insert the quarterback and allow him to grow. And you just never know. It's going to be a lot better. Obviously, we saw Jared Goff this year ball out in his second season and get them into the playoffs. And that's what you want to see. And now he's going to continue to be able to grow, has great confidence, doesn't have to overcome any of the hardship, the hard years, being hit, being losing.
Because
you don't want to develop a losing mentality. And oftentimes when you draft those guys, there's not a whole bunch of guys like a Peyton Manning or an Aikman who can overcome 1-15 seasons, 3-13 seasons, and then grow from there and then end up winning a championship. That's hard to do from a mental standpoint. So I would definitely let them have the confidence, because that's key. That's what everything is. That's why Nick Foles was able to go out and ball out the way he did, because he had the confidence from his coaching staff and in himself, and that's why he looked like he was elite on Sunday, and he played well.
One instance right now that you can think of, I can think of two, and on both sides of this thing. You look at the Colts, who – took Andrew Luck. Now, they didn't trade up or any of that stuff, but they were sitting there at one, and they got Andrew Luck. Have not put an offensive line around him at all.
Exactly.
And we see the results of that now, as nobody knows if he will ever be the same person, as he's now had to have a surgery. Doctors are saying he might have to have another surgery, because he's been getting hit since he came into the league, because they've never invested in his offensive line. So that's one side of it. Then you look to another side of it, the Cowboys – that drafted offensive linemen every year in the first round. And I remember, I know a lot of Cowboys fans that were just hot every year.
What are you doing?
We need to take a wide receiver, take a DB, take this, take that. And they're drafting linemen. Then they get their quarterback in, the third or fourth round.
Right.
Put him in there with a nice running back behind that huge offensive line, and he can just sit back there, chill, and make plays.
And it rolls his game up. So, in that sense, you can probably get away with somebody a little bit less talented because the pieces around him are good, solid pieces, great players, and elevate his game. Oftentimes it's, people thinking about it the other way around, but the guys around you is what makes you good and makes you stand up, because they're ultimately making the plays after you throw the ball, or protecting you to allow you to get the ball off. And we saw it in the Super Bowl. Tom Brady was only as good as his offensive line, because at the end of the game, they give up a sack, fumble, the guard gives it up, and the game is over. But if Tom has the protection there, I will say 90%, it's probably a high percentage that he goes down and they win that game.
Yeah, for real.
So it's all about the pieces around you. The quarterback gets all the glory, but if you don't have guys around you that can make plays and have the ability to play this game at a high level, you're not going to be that good. Or if you do, it's not going to be for a long period of time.
Now, when you were in Washington – you guys traded away to get RG3, right?
Yeah, we traded several picks, and I don't know. I can't remember the exact deal. It was about 5 years ago now. But, yeah, we traded up to get Robert. And I thought we had a solid team. We had guys on our offensive line and running game. We had Alfred Morris that year as well, who really broke out. Had Trent Williams, who's all pro, you know, probably borderline Hall of Fame caliber of left tackle. Mm-hmm. So we had guys, we had players. You know, obviously with Robert, his was more, he took a hit, but he was running, scrambling, doing that. And he just hasn't been the same since, you know, enduring some of those injuries throughout that season and kind of moving forward.
Yeah, when he came back and all of that stuff.
Yeah, all that drama that happened. Did he come back too soon? Should he have been out there? You know, was kind of all around it. So that was more of his downfall versus not having the guys around him to make plays. But, he had to carry some of them. He was dynamic that first year. But, again, they set up the offense to his skill set. And he balled out doing it. And, you know, and since then, there's a lot of other things that have come into play to not allow him to, you know, be in the league right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't look at it like that. That we were in a place where we were a pretty good team, made the playoffs, and then we lost to Russell Wilson and the Seahawks that year in the first round.
Right. We're gonna get to a break here. On the other side of the break, we're gonna talk to your brother, a 3-star athlete, right? Committed, is he 3-star?
You know, I don't know.
Because there's 5-star guys that are terrible when
right,
they get to college.
Yeah, not me.
But not you. I didn't know you were a 5-star athlete.
We'll talk about that later, man.
We're going to get into that. We're going to talk to your brother, Austin Alexander, as he committed to Fresno State yesterday on National Signing Day. That's what we'll get to on the other side of the break. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the John Murphy Show. It's Donald Jones sitting in with Lorenzo Alexander. Lorenzo's just got back in. Well, you've been back for a couple of days, but you were out in Minnesota, cold Minnesota.
Yeah, cold is an understatement. I mean, and one day I tweeted, it wasn't that bad. You know, people was complaining about it all week. But Saturday, it was about negative 20, that's what it felt like, 20, 25. I literally had my coat on. My body was always good. This is how I knew how cold it was. I had my beanie on, my hood up, and my ears still felt like they were being frostbitten. I'm like, man, I got to get back in. This hurts.
That's the worst. I always tell the story. We played Minnesota. This is when Arthur Motes hit Brett Favre. And that was like December-ish, late November, December. So it was cold here.
Right.
We get to Minnesota, and I'm like, as soon as we got off the plane to get on the buses, I'm like, yo, this is a different type of cold. It wasn't snowing or none of that. It was just cold, windy. And I was like, yo, this is crazy.
Was that University of Minnesota?
They were still in the dome. Yeah, this was before the dome collapsed.
That was crazy. I mean, the cold weather is just I couldn't do it.
That's different.
I'm glad they have a skywalk there, though.
Oh, so that's good.
So you don't have to go outside, but, you know, when you do, right now, it's a monster.
So you watched the game, the Super Bowl, in your hotel room.
I watched it. Yeah, I watched it in my hotel room. My wife went to the game. She went with one of our good friends that works for the NFL now. She used to work for the NFLPA, and they went and hung out. People was like, you're not going to the game? Mm-hmm. It's like, no, I ain't going to no game. Yeah. Well, I'm going to go to the game and watch the Patriots and Eagles play. I'm not in it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going until I either make it myself or I'm retired and obviously don't have the opportunity to make it. But my boy was giving me a hard time. I'm like, dude, man, just slow down, man. We played high school ball together.
Yeah.
Just imagine us going to watch El Cerrito, who's our rival growing up, going to watch them playing. Hey, man, let's go watch them in the championship. He's like, oh, okay, I get it now.
Right, that
makes sense. Man, I don't care if it's a Super Bowl, man. I don't need to live that.
So and National Signing Day was yesterday, so it made me wonder. I wonder how many 5-star recruits, for those of you who don't know, your 5-star recruits are supposed to be the best recruits coming out of college.
Right.
How many of those 5-star recruits actually played in the Super Bowl? I'm not sure. But we have a list of some of the top 5-star recruits in the league right now.
Yes.
Now, I know you got a bone to pick with this list. So I'm going to read some names off the list, and then I'll let you.
Go ahead. Just go. Are you going to read all of them?
No, just
10?
A couple. The top 10. I'll go to top 10.
Yeah, okay.
So the first one, Adrian Peterson.
Okay.
Cam Newton.
Yep.
Tyron Smith. Julio Jones. A.J. Green. Matthew Stafford. Eric Berry, Greg Olsen, Landon from Jersey, by the way.
Okay.
Landon Collins and Gerald McCoy.
Okay.
Those are the top 10 I guess, right now in the league.
That are in the league.
That were five-star athletes coming out of college.
And that makes sense. Those are big-name guys. So is this just a top ranking out of those guys? Because they stop at what number do they stop at? They don't do the whole league, do they?
Nah, they only stopped at 20.
Who's 20?
Ha-ha Clinton Dix.
Okay.
Ha-ha Clinton Dix was number 20. So above him, you got Dre Kirkpatrick, Ahmad Brooks. So, I mean, they're talking about, I guess, the most notable names, let's just say that.
Maybe that's what it
the
is.
The most notable names that are in the NFL right now.
Okay. It has to be.
It has to, because you.
I was a five-star. But, you know, I was a five-star back in 2001. And when Jay sent me this list, I said, let me look and see if I'm on this. I said, I ain't on this. I said, let me see if I was a five-star recruit. I had to just make sure. I remember, you know, sometimes you remember you was better than what you were.
Right.
So I get on, find my little name. Obviously, I find a little clip. Oh, okay, I was a five-star. You know, here it is. You know, I'm 14 years later in the league, still playing at a pretty high level. I've been to two Pro Bowls, right. And I was an All-Pro one time, and I couldn't find my way onto the list. So I didn't know if that was – because one guy hadn't been to a Pro Bowl at all that's on the list. So, I mean, I know they made – what they're doing on the field, he hasn't been an All-Pro either. Oof. So I'm like, at least a honorable mention or something.
Yeah.
this is ridiculous. I'm not on it. I need to be on it. Who made the list? I need to call them or tweet them.
That's terrible.
You know, I'm good for doing that.
So I went to JUCO.
Okay.
Because I was horrible in school when I was in high school. And I wasn't any stars, but I never really went to like the camps or combines or any of that stuff. And that's kind of how you get on all those lists, right? You go to those camps or combines that they were having.
I didn't go.
Well, you were just whatever.
I was a baller. I know.
You was a
baller. Go ahead. Go keep going.
I'm gonna tell you what overshadowed me. What really overshadowed? We had Eugene Monroe, who was the number one recruit that year.
Oh yeah.
He got all the attention out of the school, so all of the schools was coming just to see him. That was a year under him, and then we had Daniel Davis, who was like a four-star athlete. We had a bunch of dudes that was really high up there.
Right.
I didn't have any stars, so I go to JUCO, and there were a bunch of guys there that were four and five star athletes, and I'm watching them like their high school films, and I'm like, all right, you look all right. We get to practice, and I'm like, you are terrible.
Terrible, yeah.
You are terrible. How did you become a five star athlete? Would you run a good 40? And a lot of times, especially today,
right,
when these kids run a good 40, that's coaches like, ooh, 4.3, I got to take them.
Right,
I got to take them. And so I was a little upset about that. But yesterday was National Signing Day. Your brother Austin,
right,
and. I'm not sure what he was.
I don't even know if he has any star. He probably got at least two or three. I mean, he's a good athlete basketball-wise, you know, 6'7". So he has a frame and stuff. He just wasn't highly recruited because he was more of a basketball player and really didn't pursue football probably until really his senior year.
All right,
and by that time, I mean, like you said, if you don't go to the camps and all the stuff, the whole circuit they have for football these days, it's kind of hard to get on that national stage, that national level. But he's going to definitely turn some heads once he gets in that program over at Fresno State.
All right, well, you know, we pulled him out of class. We're trying not to get him in trouble, have him in detention or anything like that. We got him on the line right now. So, Austin, how you doing?
I'm doing well, boss. How are you?
I'm good, man. It's Donald Jones, and I'm here with your brother, Lorenzo.
What's up, little brother? Sir. I'm going to beat you to the punch because I know you like to try to clown me, man. What's up? What's going on?
Hey, I'm a three-star, by the way.
Are you a three-star? I mean, I don't know. I still can dog you, so, you know, it don't really matter how many stars you got with me.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that one, bro.
So I can't beat you in the game of hoop or nothing like that? Is that what you're telling me?
Nah, you can't give me no hoop. I'm
Hey, Austin, look.
He's definitely not faster either.
Hey, Austin, look, he said he's a five-star. You're a three-star. So something you ain't doing right, so you need to step your game up. But listen, yesterday was National Signing Day. What was that? What was the whole recruiting process like for you, and how was it yesterday to finally – make it really come to an end?
The whole recruiting process, you know, it was a fun journey, you know, just talking to all these coaches, all these different coaches coming to see me from like Jim Harbaugh and then like UCF's head coach and, you know, all these different coaches and me going on these visits and seeing all these different campuses. So, yeah, it was a real fun journey. And then, yeah, it was really exciting and like relieving to finally, you know, make my decision and have the whole Sacramento community behind me. So, yeah, it was really dope.
Great. Well, you know, I'm going to give you your coach and my old coach a shout-out too, Jeff Tefford. I know you mentioned Harbaugh. You got to mention Jeff Tefford every time you say something.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He the one who gave you the scholarship and who you're going to be playing for, but don't worry about that. I got you.
Yeah.
what What should the Fresno State Bulldogs expect getting out of you as a wide receiver? What are some of your strengths and some of the things you can grow in?
I feel like my speed and ability allows me, you know, to make me get away from certain defenders, and I feel like I can stretch the field out, make big time plays, and with my length, I can stretch up and get 50-50 balls in contested situations. So, yeah, I just feel like I'm an all around great threat.
You talked about your length, standing at 6'6", 215. Is that correct, or do we have that wrong?
6'5", actually. They gasped a little bit, and then I'm about 220.
Oh, 6'5", 220. All right, well, 6'5", that's big for any receiver. I don't care if you're in the league, high school, college. But what are some of the things that you feel like you got to work on once you get to Fresno State?
Some of the things I need to work on, because, get down to my route, breaking down as well my cut, because I like to stand up a lot when I run. So, you know, as a DB, I think that's easy to, kind of read on and break on to when you see somebody from standing up high, getting down low to break down. So, me just running my routes crisper, so I can get that separation between me and the defender and make big time plays.
Who's a receiver right now in the NFL that you kind of look up to or model your game after, or you know, that you like to watch?
I got two. I like Devontae Adams. You know, he's a Fresno State alumni, and I like Julio, of course. But yeah, Julio, Devontae Adams. Those are probably my two. Randall Cobb, too. Shout out to Randall Cobb. Worked out with him a couple times this summer. So,
what's it like for you, as you know, a kid coming out of high school going to Fresno State, to have a brother who's in the NFL, and being able to work out with these guys? Even just being from that area in California, where you got a lot of guys that come out of that area, where you might get a chance to work out with some of the pro guys or top college guys on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's definitely a blessing. You know, it's a dream come true just to see how my brother grinds day in and day out, and have those guys around me telling me, because, you know, they already went through all this. So just having that information and knowledge that they had, and them passing it on to me. So, yeah, it's a great resource, and, you know, I'm just thankful and blessed to have that opportunity.
So now the decision is made, and you taking your talents, as you put it, down to Fresno State for the next 4 years. What does the process look for you like now as you kind of prepare to enter college, obviously, in the summer?
Oh, yeah, we're going to be grinding. We're going to be grinding day in, day out. Hopefully I can get back up there this summer with my big brother again for a couple months, stay with him and just grind, you know, turn it up 5 notches and just grind, get ready for that college game so we can turn some heads and make some noise.
Right. And, you know, obviously I already know you're going to ball out on the field. Have you thought about what you may want to study once you get to Fresno State, and what you may want to do post-career?
You know, when my big brother, he threw out, he did legal studies, so that was kind of on my plate. I'm not too sure if I want to pursue it. I might want to get into something that has something to do with business. So, yeah, I'm going to get on it, but I haven't really pursued what I'm going to do.
Oh. And then outside of football, you know, what are some of the things you like to do outside of playing those video games and getting beat by me in basketball?
You know, of course, I'm a hooper still, so I like to get in the gym with my friends, you know, sit around. And, you know, we might play the video game every once in a while and then, but, you know, we like getting outside, getting on the field, and just competing. So, yeah, other than football, just basketball or playing the video games, something like that around there.
You know, it's interesting. We were just talking about how you don't see the kids actually just getting outside competing, whether it's basketball, football. You know, just playing outside in the streets, in the yard, or anything like that. It's so much AAU and all of that stuff now. You feel
definitely.
The same way?
Yes, sir. Definitely.
You played AAU ball, though, growing up. Who were some of the big-name basketball players that you competed against?
We played against a couple guys. We played against Ivan Rabb. You know, he's in the NBA now. I think on the Bucks. No, he don't play for the Bucks. He plays for – who Ivan Rabb play for? Well, I don't know. Ivan Rabb – DJ Wilson, he's on the Bucks. Marquise Chris, he plays for the Suns. We played against who else we played? Yeah, those are some of the guys we played. And it's a couple other guys on the rise, actually. So, yeah, we played against some good guys coming up.
All right, well, we're joined by Austin Alexander, wide receiver who a three-star recruit, as he wanted to make sure everybody knew. Three-star recruit just committed yesterday on National Signing Day to Fresno State. Austin, thank you. Get back to class.
I appreciate it. I got you, bro.
All right, man.
All right, man. Thank you. Austin actually joins us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. We're going to get to a break. On the other side of the break, we're going to get to this Rob Gronkowski call, 911 call. I'm not sure if you had a chance to hear it.
No, not yet.
Not yet. We're going to talk some more about Nick Foles, some more about the right way to build a roster.
Yep.
We got a lot of different things that we're going to cover in the next 2 hours, but especially on the next side of this break. It's the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the John Murphy Show. Donald Jones, Lorenzo Alexander. So you were out at the Super Bowl,
yeah.
But your mom was here with the kids. Now, Gronk obviously played in the Super Bowl. Rob Gronkowski played in the Super Bowl, was on the losing team. I know Buffalo fans want to hear that.
they lost.
They just want you to
say
that.
Say it. Yeah, they lost.
They were on the losing team. And then while he was out there, his house actually was robbed. And so I guess when he got back home, he called 911. We actually had the sound when he called 911. So here's Gronk actually calling 911.
Where is your emergency?
Hello, this is an emergency. This is Rob Gronkowski calling. And while I was gone, my whole house got robbed while on the Super Bowl trip. And I just got back.
Now, this is not actually an emergency, but while I was gone, my house got robbed.
That dude is on something else. If all my stuff is gone when I get back, this is an emergency, man. I don't know how he grew up or whatever. I want my stuff back.
Yeah, right. Well, you know.
Send everybody out.
Gronk, he comes from a good family. They got nice business.
I don't even
everything.
Think that matters, though. I need
yeah,
all my
like,
stuff
that's
back.
My stuff.
I don't want to spend
stuff.
My money.
I spent my money on my stuff.
You know, he got it so he can get it. But who wants to spend?
Who wants it? And to be honest with you, it just feels like a violation.
Right.
Like somebody was in my house. You know, so when you travel, when you go somewhere and you take the whole family, do you ever feel like you're a target?
No. I mean, because it's stuff I can't control if somebody wants to decide to break in when we're not there. I mean, that's kind of the hard thing about being an athlete, because people can know your schedule, essentially.
Yeah.
Know when you're going to be on away games.
Right.
Know if you, let's say you have a house in two different cities, know when, okay, it's off season, so most guys leave Buffalo. So, okay, let's go try to do it then. I mean, all you got to do is just try to do all the precautions, have the safety inspection, have a obviously alarm system, video cameras, all those things that can help prevent it. But at the end of the day, people are going to do what they want to do. The sad thing about it is, in most of these cases, it's people that you know. Somebody who's been in your house, you've invited, and they've kind of cased it out and kind of figured it out. You know, and I always think about Sean Taylor when I hear about players' house getting broken into and how he died. It was actually one of his niece's friends that had been at a birthday party a couple of weeks prior, and they thought he was going to be in Washington, but he was hurt, so he was back at home, and that's how it happened. So, unfortunately, these things happen, and unfortunately, it's people that we've trusted enough to invite into our homes, and that's why I'm real meticulous, especially my wife. She's even on another level as far as who's coming over or being careful about tweeting certain things or letting people into your home, you know, without kind of vetting them before they come in.
And it's one thing when the entire family leaves. It's another thing when you leave and you leave the family back home.
Yeah.
Because then you're like, all right, people going to think that we all gone.
Gone, right.
And then they might go to my house, and my family's still there. And, you know, you might have a security system and all of that stuff, but ultimately, my family is still there, and you don't know what can happen.
Yeah, unfortunately, we've never had that instance. I mean, at the end of the day, all I can do is pray about it and ask for protection over my house and, you know, make sure that, obviously, everybody knows to get to 911. My wife knows how to handle herself and get to a phone. And you just pray those things don't happen and people will be respectful. But, you know, obviously it's going to happen and things will continue to happen like this.
Like Gronk?
Yeah.
Who doesn't care about his
but
stuff?
But my 911 call is going to sound completely different.
Y'all better get here now. Get here now. This is an emergency.
Man, where were y'all at? Y'all wasn't watching my house when I was gone? Man, we need a patrol or something.
You calling ADT, all of them,
I'm
everything.
I'm going to knock on neighbor houses. Y'all didn't see nobody. What's up? Might do my own investigation.
Yeah, right. Call an advanced alarm. Listen, something is going on right here. We need to figure this thing out. But, hey, we're going to get to another break here. When we come back on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about the franchise tag.
Yeah.
Which, you know, teams can really get into franchising guys. I know a lot of guys hate playing under the franchise tag. Some guys, like Kirk Cousins, is like, I'll do it.
I'll do it.
Yeah. So
it's all about perspective.
We're going to look at some of the players that have potential to be franchised or cut just because the team doesn't want to franchise them. So that's what we'll get to on the other side of the break. It's the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run. Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White. He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. McCoy cuts to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown, Buffalo.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
And welcome back to the John Murphy Show. Donald Jones, Lorenzo Alexander. Hey, we were talking to your brother about his commitment to Fresno State, and you were talking about you were a five-star athlete. What schools, I know you went to Cal, but what schools right were on your list?
Well, initially I had planned to go to Stanford, but that's one of the few schools you have to actually apply through regular admissions, and I didn't get accepted. Notre Dame, Miami, Oklahoma, USC, Oregon. There was a lot of big-time power schools, UCLA, Georgia Tech. I mean, it was a ton of schools.
Yeah,
we talk about this. You talk about five stars, three stars. And if it's kids out there listening or parents out there listening, like you were saying earlier, I mean, you have some five stars that can't play, and you have some one stars that end up playing 10, 15 years in the NFL.
Yeah.
So don't really worry about what somebody else's ranking or perspective is of you. I mean, this can just continue to work hard. Obviously respect the process, being accountable, working hard, making sure your academics are right. Because ultimately, I wanted to get a free education. And that was where my mindset was, because I grew up in the inner city, couldn't afford to go to a nice college. And to be able to have the opportunity to even have a Stanford or Cal opportunity, I mean, that's really life-changing, generational-type things that change and impact people's lives and communities. In my family now, I was the first one to graduate college. It's, you know, obviously a prestigious college like Cal, number one in the country, public university. And now my kids have something they can aspire to. So, think about those type of things instead of just being, oh, I'm a five-star, three-star, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter.
Yes, like I said, I wasn't any stars. I don't remember being any stars. But it's the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive. Donald Jones, Lorenzo Alexander sitting in. We're having a lot of fun today. We're talking about a lot of different things, high school football, kids who are five-star athletes, kids who are don't get any stars but end up still playing long careers in the NFL. We're talking about franchise. We're actually going to get into some franchise tag stuff
right
here right now. So the franchise tag, actually, February 20th, teams can begin to use their franchise tags on their unrestricted free agents. Now, let's first of all, break down to people who are listening what the franchise tag is used for.
Well, franchise tags are normally used for your high-profile players, guys that are coming up that are unrestricted free agents, and it's a way for teams to extend them and then just give them a basic deal. It's not basic as in terms of pay, but it's pretty much laid out there. Mm-hmm. So they normally take the average, I think, of the top five players at your position, and that's how they come up with the number, and it changes from different players. I don't know what the actual numbers are, but obviously quarterback is normally the highest, and it kind of works its way down from there. And there are different levels of it as well. There's an exclusive franchise, non-exclusive.
Yep.
And that all, really pertains to what a team would have to give up if they wanted to get that specific player, and it's normally draft picks. And that's just a tool a team uses. But it's a one-year deal, and it's guaranteed for that amount of money.
Right.
So, for a guy like myself, franchise me. I'll take it. I was undrafted. I've been grinding from the bottom up. I'll take $10 million, whatever, for 1 year guaranteed. I'm not mad. But obviously there's a lot of debate because of the longevity of the deal. Obviously your career is not that long, and when you think about guys like a Cam Newton or Stephon Gilmore or, you know, whoever that top tier player is, their value when they look at it over a 3, 4, 5 year period is much more than $10 million guaranteed.
Right.
And so most players don't like it. And I understand it because they want even more guaranteed money than that because they may get hurt that next season.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important, especially in our league where your career is so short and it's so in the environment is so hostile, whether you don't know if you're going to be wanted next year because it's a what have you done for me lately type
yeah.
league.
Yeah.
And the injury rate is 100%. The guys want that comfort level and that security, knowing that, okay, if I sign a 4 or 5 year deal and I'm going to get, you know, $40 million guaranteed versus the 1 year, $10 million guaranteed, I want that longevity.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously when we talk about it, we talk about those big numbers. Fans can't understand it. I mean, I can't understand it sometimes because, I mean, that's how I grew up. I grew up low income, poor. So, I mean, I get it. But at the end of the day, when you have this opportunity, you want to maximize your money. You're trying to do it as maximize as much as you can because,
right.
you know, the other end of that ownership, they're going to try to get you as cheap as possible or replace you with cheap labor that can maybe do what you do in a sense.
Right. Yeah. So I feel like they're – and this goes back to Darrelle Revis. And you were just saying, franchise me. Kirk Cousins has been a guy. Like, franchise
right.
me. I don't care.
He's a fourth round
pick. He's a quarterback, though.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's a high number.
He's getting
and
paid.
And I would – beg to guess that their injury rate is a lot lower than
everybody else.
Normal positional players.
Yeah. Now, you look at a player like Darrelle Revis, who, and I remember talking to Bart Scott about this when he was still with the Jets and I trained down there in New Jersey. And he was like, look, man, players need to start taking shorter deals where they can get the bonus money.
Right.
And then another 2 years, you can get another bonus and another bonus. Do you feel like that's something guys are starting to think about?
You know what? I tell you where it's really shown up, and I think it may start coming over to football a little bit more, like LeBron James or any of those big stars now. They're taking the 2-3 year deals, knowing when the TV money's going to kick in. So they're taking it for more of a business aspect.
Yep.
So you're not going to lock me in, and I know the cap is about to jump. I'm going to lock myself in, and then when that cap jump, then I'm going to hit you again because now my salary rate is going to go up and you're not going to keep that money from me. So I think players are starting to understand more of the business side of football and how TV dollars and the revenue works and when you're going to get certain spikes.
Mm-hmm.
And you try to capture as much of that as possible and we'll start doing it. And Revis was one of those guys because of that. He understood that the cap was going to continue to raise, and if it's raising and you have me locked in, my percentage of that cap is shrinking and shrinking.
Right.
And you start thinking of more of it as a percentage versus actual dollar amount.
Mm-hmm.
So guys are getting smarter because that's what they're doing on the end. That's how people become wealthy because they understand the little nuances and how to capitalize that. And you can apply that to any aspect in your life, you know, whether you're an NFL player or you're a teacher or whatever, trying to figure out the different ways where you can capture a better salary or take advantage of the system to work in your benefit.
I feel like, is that something that you worked with a lot with the NFLPA?
Right.
Is that something that you guys teach the players when they're at the combine or coming out, things like that?
At the end of the day, it always comes down to leverage. Some people have it. Some people don't.
Yeah.
So if you are a Darrelle Revis or you are a Cam Newton or you are a Peyton Manning or a Von Miller, one of those caliber of players, and you're wanted, you can almost demand whatever you want because there are not a lot of those guys walking around. They're very far and not enough. They're rarities. Guys like myself where you can say, oh, we can find somebody else that can do what you do. Maybe not quite like the way you do it, but it'll be good enough. I don't have that same type of leverage. I can't ask for the same type of deals. That's why there's really an emphasis from a PA perspective that you talked about is having some of these top-tier players ask for guaranteed money.
Right.
And that's always a big issue. You know, every time it comes around, you hear these baseball players, basketball players, because there's nothing in their CBA that demands that is guaranteed. Just whoever, I don't know who the first player was, that had some leverage, asked for it, and then became a business practice, something that is expected to happen.
Right.
But there's nothing in the CBA that demands it. So that's what you always want to see, some of your top-tier guys that can take advantage of that because they have all the leverage. Because you're not going to, like, for example, they're not going to trade Tom Brady. Hey, I want my money guaranteed.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and then, you guarantee Tom Brady's money. I mean, you want me too, right? I'm that type of player. All right, and then it becomes part of a business practice versus something that is kind of out there in a distant dream that football players are always wanting and asking for.
Well, we're going to get into – I want to name a couple of players who might get franchised, been franchised in the past. But before we do that, because you brought up Tom Brady. Now, Tom Brady has notoriously took a pay cut on the salary. Right. He still gets his bonus money.
Right. His situation is different. I don't even know. He's getting it somewhere. Obviously, his wife is making 50 a year. So who really cares?
I used to always say, like, this dude is Tom Brady, like one of the best athletes in the world right now. And he still can't even go to his – he still can't talk trash to his wife because she still makes more money than him.
Of course, man. Hey,
it's crazy. Ooh,
he married up, baby. Yeah. That's how you do it. I'm married up. That's just how you do it. You got to do it like that, you know?
Oh, man. Now, you ever – sometimes when guys are out here and as a player, you're always telling other guys, hey, man, get your money, get your money.
Right.
But is there ever a point where you're like, man, like you took that big deal, but it's really hurting the team now because it really hurt the salary cap?
No.
No?
No, not at all. I mean, because owners are going to pay who they want to pay. Mm-hmm. And just because they don't pay that player doesn't mean they're going to pay me or another guy that you think that we may want.
All right.
So I never get into the conversation where I'm trying to get into somebody else's pocket. The only advice I ever give players is the grass is not always greener, and understand who you are as a player. Because mm-hmm. some guys have a misconception of who they are and what their value is, and they ask for something and the team doesn't want to give it to them, and then they go somewhere else where there's not that relationship or connection to the organization or fan base, and they go there for a minimum deal, and then you never hear from them again.
Yeah.
And I've seen that happen throughout my career. So I think that the best thing is just understanding what your leverage is, who you are, what you've done, and then approach it from that mindset. And then if you can get a little bit more, get a little bit more. But don't go in there asking for the moon when you're not that type of player. And because you can find yourself out on the street a lot sooner than you expected because you had a misconception of who you are.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's get into some of these players who might have been franchised in the past, might be looking at getting franchised. The first one we'll look at, running back position, Le'Veon Bell. What do you think? I mean, obviously you don't know what will happen.
Right.
But I'm going to ask the question, what do you think will happen?
You know, you just never know with these type of things. I mean, obviously he had the whole holdout this year.
Mm-hmm. And he was tagged this year.
And he was tagged. Under the tag. You know, you want to see what happens with Ben if he walks away. I mean, because there's money, a lot of money tied up in there. But mm-hmm. Pittsburgh historically doesn't pay guys anyway. But you can't – I mean, Le'Veon is a monster. He's a key. But you also have A.B. It's so many things working. See, it's not just Le'Veon's contract. People – I mean, and him as a player, and it's hard to see.
Yeah.
You're thinking about just me. This is me. I'm trying to get paid. But it's a – I'm pretty sure they have a big board up in there. This guy's here. Okay, this guy's going to be coming up in 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. This guy's over here. Can we afford to pay Le'Veon? He's a running back. You know, when is his decline going to start? But for me, looking at him and what he brings to the organization, I think he opens up things for Antonio Brown on the outside and mm-hmm. is a dynamic piece of his game, and he is a top three back in his league. I think they figure something out this year.
You see, it's crazy because it's a running back, and you were talking about ownership, and, you know, business is business. Like, you're always trying to be cheaper.
Yeah.
So they looking at it like, you're a running back. You've had some injuries in the past. I mean, chances are you're going to get hurt again playing that running back position.
At some point, it has to hit the wall. Well, can you tell me when that wall is?
When that wall is. Because I'm still balling
yeah,
right now.
I'm still
now,
balling.
You know? So, when you look at Le'Veon Bell, you got to say to yourself, like, man, I wonder if they tag him again or if they can get something done, or they just say,
I don't know if they're going to tag him again.
That number
jumps each year, too, when you tag him, just like Kirk.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look back at what the Redskins, what Kirk was asking for initially compared to what he would get paid if they tagged, I think it would be like $34 million. I think he would have been making like $22 or $25 mm-hmm. this year, you know, if they would have paid the original number that he asked for. So it jumps up to kind of disincentivize teams from tagging guys over and over and over again.
Now, you're talking about Kirk Cousins, so we'll move on to Kirk Cousins. Now, they brought in, they traded for Alex Smith, and they paid Alex Smith all of this money. Now, the reports were that they will tag Kirk Cousins and then try to trade him. And now, this would be his third year under the tag.
Right. And I would if I was in GMs around the NFL, I'll say do it.
Yeah.
And then sit there and not do anything. And then you come calling me when you're trying to get all that money off your book. That's what I would do.
Because
please,
all
tag
that
me.
Money is against your cap.
Yeah. So go ahead. You're not competing no other way. You got two quarterbacks, mm-hmm. one making 34, the other one making what, 20? What is he making? 24, 25?
Alex Smith?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. All right, we'll see y'all, and you pay the rest of your players, the rest of them hoes. All right, go ahead. That's the way I'm thinking as a GM.
Yeah.
Please.
Go ahead and tag
him. Yeah,
tag him. We're not taking that 34.
Not taking it. And then, you lose the leverage anyway that you think you're gaining by tagging him because you think people want him. Go ahead. At some point, you're going to want to get off Kirk, and I'm going to get me a better deal than even that. I mean, so go ahead.
Man. That's great. So Kirk is sitting there like, tag me.
Tag me. He's in a win-win situation. Yeah, he's either going to get tagged for $34 million or he's going to go to a team that's going to pay him and allow him to play.
Yeah.
He's good either way. He's played his cards right.
He has the leverage.
Now, Kirk is the ultimate businessman. I've played with him, been around him. He is very calculated, and he is sitting fine. Saw him at the Super Bowl, smile on his face, enjoying his family. He's good.
Then we see a picture of him at what was that restaurant? Was it Shake Shack sitting right there?
Oh, yeah, it was at Shake Shack.
There's a picture of him at Shake Shack?
Yeah, chilling.
Just chilling with a hat on.
We regular guys, too. We like Shake Shack, too.
He looked like somebody's dad.
He is somebody's dad. Yeah, newborn at the house.
Oh, all right, cool. So, all right, we'll move on to another one. Jimmy Garoppolo. That's a big one.
Nah, you want to lock him in.
You want to lock him in.
He went out there. He played well. Obviously, I think they went, 5-0, 6-0 when he was out there playing. They have a lot of cap room. You want to lock him up.
Yeah, he was 5-0. The tag for him would be north of $23 million if they tag him for this year.
But if you're sure, and I think most people are sure on Jimmy, you want to lock him up and just pay him.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, the cap is going to continue to go up. So you don't want to franchise a guy and then franchise him again. And he's already showcased his talent. You know what you're getting. You know what his ability is. Mm-hmm. And I would take note, Kyle was with Kirk Cousins, too. So he's already been through that where you're tagging guys.
Mm-hmm.
So pay him now. So because it's only gonna get worse.
Yeah.
I mean, because the cap is going to continue to go up. People talk about TV ratings are down. Ratings are down all across America. And then you see what Fox paid, $3.5 billion. It ain't
kicking into like any of the technology. So right. Amazon and those that will have deals
exactly.
Too.
So it ain't nothing wrong with the game. So it's going to continue to go up. So you're gonna end up paying him either now or later, and it's going to cost you more always later.
You feel like because the quarterback position is one position because of the league that we're in and how teams are really thirsty for quarterbacks. If you don't have one, you're trying to get one.
Right.
So when a team like the Redskins, they tag Kirk Cousins, I feel like they lose leverage. Unless he goes and gets hurt or just has a horrible season, they lose leverage on that player. That player immediately gains the leverage.
And that's why they kept tagging him. Tagged him hard. Ball. Tag me again. All right. Ball. You know? And it just is what it is. They trying to hopefully he doesn't do as well. But even if he does, drops a little bit, he's a quarterback, and you have to pay quarterback. It just is what it is. They created the monster. Now you got to live with it.
Yeah.
You know, paying, you know, the quarterback such a significant amount of the cap. And he's going to look around, look at his numbers, look at what other guys has gotten.
Yep.
And you can talk about winning and losing all you want, but we're talking about production. Winning and losing is a team game at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I put up this many numbers, this many interceptions, this many touchdowns, and this is what Joe Blow over here got 2 years
that's
ago.
What you just gave Alex Smith.
Or Alex Smith or whoever. Uh-huh. You're going to. That I want that plus inflation, and that's just is what it is, business. Take it or leave it.
Take it or leave
that's
it.
What he was trying to do earlier before he even blew up.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to take it.
How much does tagging guys, especially like a quarterback like Kirk, hurt the relationship between the player and the team itself? Because you tag me, I'm going to go out here and I'm going to play with my guys.
Right.
But ultimately, when you come back to me and you try to negotiate a deal, or especially if you tag me again, our relationship is done.
And I think that is really depends more so on the player and in their relationship and what they're getting out of it. I mean, because are you telling me that you don't believe in my talent?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I need to prove myself? I think it's always about the dialogue and what is said behind closed doors that shapes the relationship side of it. Because owners or whoever's doing the cap and giving you money can say some crazy things behind closed doors
Woo,
and make you feel a certain type of way.
What?
You know, like, they may smile when they're on TV and say the great things, but behind closed doors, when they're talking about you and really breaking you down, it's a whole nother side that comes out of them, because now they're trying to get you for cheap and they want to hurt your feelings in the process.
Yeah.
And like, you ain't worth this. You suck at this, and you can't do this. And you're lucky to be here that we even talking to you. You know, right. They get that type of feel to it. So I think it depends. But I think Kirk has done a great job of handling it the best way and pretty much just saying, okay, tag me, I'll sign it, I'm over there. Boom. Some guys are more in the media, and they even blow it up even more. So I think it really depends on the guy and how they choose about, you know, airing dirty laundry.
Because
I think every player can, but different players handle it differently.
The fans don't understand how crazy it gets in those negotiations.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I think about when you talk about it, I think about Preston Brown, right, who his mom represents. He has an agent, but his mom is in there too.
Yeah, that's
and I can
difficult.
Only imagine her sitting there, like, and they start going at him. And she's like,
right.
What? You ain't gonna talk about my baby, just go straight mom, forget the whole agent part.
Hey,
you ain't gonna talk about my baby like that. All right, another one we got. Case Keenum, Minnesota. Now, they're in a situation where he had a magical season for him, took him all the way to where they lost to the Eagles in the NFC Championship game. The crazy, magical play to Stephon Diggs that everybody knows about. But he was like their third string. Well, he was their second string because Teddy Bridgewater wasn't there. But he ended up the starter and had a good season.
Right. So
they have Sam Bradford and Teddy Bridgewater that they got to figure out. Does he get tagged?
I'm not quite sure, because I know there is some issue going on with Teddy. And I don't know if they figured that out about him getting his fifth year option, whether they can give him that $15 million, or is it something is nullified because he was hurt.
Right.
And I think that depends a lot on whether or not they tag Case. If I was there, I probably would tag him. If you say Case is my guy, I would want to see it again.
Right, because he's been a journeyman.
Yeah. And you know, and he's had some subpar years, and this was obviously his best year.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that they probably tag him, especially because they have another quarterback on the – yeah, they probably would tag him.
All right, we'll go to someone that Bills fans know. Sammy Watkins out in L.A. Sammy had a pretty good year. I think he had like 6 or 7 touchdowns. Didn't have the big numbers in terms of yards, but they used him in the red zone, and he had a bunch of touchdowns for him. Now, they paid Robert Woods.
Right.
They paid Tavon Austin. You'd have to believe that if Sammy gets tagged, one of those guys has to go.
Go, right.
And then they drafted Cooper Kupp, and I think they like him too, because he get a lot of balls out there. So, Sammy Watkins, will he be an L.A. Ram next year? Will he get tagged?
I don't think you tag Sammy. I think they try to work out a deal with him.
Work out a deal with Sammy and somebody else has to go.
I mean, not necessarily. I don't know the cap situation, but rarely I don't see them tagging Sammy in that way. I mean, he's been there a year. I don't know if he was a dynamic playmaker to where you would tag him. Like if you said Julio, okay, maybe we would tag AB, you probably try to tag him. I think they try to work out a long-term deal with him instead of tagging him.
You know, it's interesting because, like I said, they would have Tavon and Robert Woods that are getting paid. You have three receivers getting
a lot
of money.
Right, and Sammy looking there like, I'm a top guy, too. I was a first-round pick.
I just had 6 touchdowns, which matters.
Yeah, it's hard to talk about all these guys, but I don't know, what did Tavon Austin do? I mean, I know he's kind of been getting some bad reviews, but I haven't watched film to see, what is he really doing and how productive he is based on the contract he's given. So that always plays a part, especially in the psyche of players. Like, man, I'm over here, and they don't want to pay me, but they paid that dude.
Yeah.
And it is what it is. And so, you know, I don't see Sammy wanting to get tagged, especially with some of the injury history.
Yeah.
And they may try to use that against him. But that for him, he's like, okay, well, I've been hurt in the past. Maybe I need to get paid now.
Yeah.
I just put a solid season together so that I can stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all need to pay me.
What about a guy that you play against? Jarvis Landry out in Miami. Kenny Stills, they paid.
I don't know if they're not going to franchise Landry.
Landry.
Jarvis. Yeah, I mean, it was talks for a minute that they might even trade him.
Yeah.
So when you have that, and that's not just, you know, smoke and mirrors. Stuff like that doesn't come out of their camp. They're just trying to see who's going to hit, who's going to bite. Is somebody going to call us and see? So I think it might be a little bit of a fallout there with him, and maybe he'd be a free agent coming up. I don't even know if they'll bring him back. But he's a good player.
He is a good player.
Really good player.
He is a good player for them. He's their underneath guy. But when he catches the ball, he's best.
He's a physical, feisty guy that plays borderline. reckless. Right. I'll put that.
Yeah.
But he, I mean, I love competing against him because you're going to get everything. You know, he's real physical as a receiver, which you don't see often, especially out of a smaller stature guy.
What about Jimmy Graham out in Seattle? Jimmy Graham, 31. His tag will be $10 million, something like that. You don't see him getting tagged?
No, I don't see him getting tagged. I mean, Jimmy's been kind of quiet of late.
Yes.
You know, I don't know if I had anything to do with that last year in the Pro Bowl. You know, I like to take my shots when I can. I got the platform to do it, right? He yelled at me for no reason. I'm playing football game.
He did, yeah. You know, out here know, playing football,
right,
man.
Yeah, you know, he's a good fit. He obviously stretches the field and gives you a special dynamic, but I don't know if he's franchise worthy.
That franchise.
Especially the older you get, because that's what teams look 31? At. 31, do I want to, you know, pay a guy?
All right, well, that was it was good to talk about a couple of guys that you played against, a couple of guys that you actually played with. The franchise tag is always something that players don't want to play under that, you know, especially if you're not a quarterback. If you're a quarterback, you franchise me because I'm about to get paid.
Yeah.
But everybody else is like, I might get hurt.
Man. Whew.
Even at the quarterback position, Drew Brees got hurt under the franchise, you know, which got him out of San Diego to New Orleans.
Right.
So, you know, it's something that players don't like, but I do like how everything is, or I think a lot of players are really starting to think about doing the shorter deals and just getting that bonus money.
Yeah, and that's key. And then you understand the business side of it because the cap bounces up every year. So if you're one of those players that can do that, you can get a bigger bonus every year too and a bigger chunk of that salary cap, but it's maybe smaller percentage, but your numbers are increasing financially.
All right, well, when we come back, we're going to talk about some more about building a roster and building a roster here in Buffalo, if you want to get into that a little bit. I know a lot of people want to talk about the draft and quarterback and all of that stuff. So we're going to talk about building a roster up. It's the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Oh, man. Welcome back to the John Murphy Show. Donald Jones sitting in with Lorenzo Alexander having a lot of fun. So, Lorenzo, we got to have fun. Matter of fact, Jimmy Garoppolo just NFL breaking news. Jimmy Garoppolo agreed to a 5-year deal with the 49ers, 137.5.
What did I tell you, man? See, I think I should do in this business, man.
Be a GM?
I could be a GM.
Oh.
But just broadcasting. See, I just told you, I don't want to deal with them.
Did you have some inside access, some inside scoop or something like that?
No, just playing 13 years, you know.
Well, yeah,
you
definitely.
Know, being around, seeing how they operate and work and knowing Jimmy as a player, playing against him and seeing what he did out there. Got a lot of guys like that up.
137.
Because, you know, you franchise them.
I don't have how much is guaranteed and all that stuff. I'm sure we'll find that out
soon. A bunch of
it. Quarterback?
Yeah, probably 70. 70 to 80 of it, I guarantee. Because what did Alex get? What his out of his 94 was guaranteed 50,
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, 70, 80.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So listen, when you are an NFL player and you're making big deals like Jimmy Garoppolo, you can now this came from out there. I just want you to know this, all right?
Before where we go it came into from? It,
I'm just letting you know, you can afford to buy lunch boxes that you can actually plug into the wall.
Oh, you want to? Why do you even go along with what they doing, man? It is mad because they didn't find it first. You know, it's funny when I find it and bring it in here.
Yeah, exactly.
And I didn't want to make fun
Lorenzo
of it. Yeah,
has a lunchbox.
That's what I do. I'm a professional, right? Like I told you, I'm prepared. So I know I'm gonna be over here. So I brought my food from home. I'm on a diet right now. I'm doing Whole 30. So I need to bring my food from home. I can't eat what's up in here.
Oh man.
I'm not sure if y'all have a microwave. So if I'm sorry. Some warm food, it's again. You know, it's a dad move, but I'm prepared, you know?
Yeah.
I'm wise. They just mad because they didn't think of it. But they didn't tell you. They out there asking, where'd you get it from?
Right.
How
right,
much it cost?
Right.
Can I get one? They don't tell you all that. They don't want to bring that up.
They don't want us to have a lunchbox
right,
like
now
DJ
they off
Khaled.
Camera. They can't even take no accountability from this.
They make me the scapegoat here.
It's okay. It all trickles down. And Jay back there, you know, he talked about my bit emojis. They like to throw shots. You know,
they
through
do.
You.
Through me,
you. You
right,
know what I
right.
Mean? Yeah. They don't want to say it to my face.
It's crazy. They throw
they're
shots through me.
They're
excited
about it.
It's all good. Hey, so listen, I was watching last night. I watch a lot of Netflix, right?
Yeah.
And I came across this Snoop Dogg series on Netflix.
Okay.
And Snoop Dogg has this league out in California. And there have been a couple of guys now that are in the NFL, John Ross being the most notable one, first-round pick.
Oh, yeah.
He played in this league when he was young. He has this league, and it's really an after-school program, but he turned it into – it's a football league. And the kids, you know, they play. I'm not sure how many teams he has in the league, but right. I know he travels, though. And I'm watching it, and they were traveling up to – in this first episode, they were traveling up to Seattle to play this team up in Seattle. They talked about going down to Houston. They travel to two different states a year just for – it's for inner city kids.
Right.
To keep them out of the streets. And it's really to, you know, introduce them to a new life. And that's why they travel to different states, because that's not right. even their in league type of game.
Yeah.
And it's just – he's like, yo, just trying to broaden get these horizons. Kids on a plane. You know, some of them never been on a plane. They'll never know what that's like to be on a plane. Right. And you come from that type of environment. I come from that type of environment. Right. So one of his coaches is crazy on the show.
Right.
Now, it's reality
TV.
Yeah. But you got to believe at some point, you know.
That's who he is.
Right. And he's cursing the kids out like crazy. And, you know, you got moms that are like, I don't want you cursing at my kids and all of that stuff. He's like an old school type of coach.
Right.
Really. But he might be a little over exaggerated in the show. But you come from that type of environment. So what's it like, or how important is it to have a coach like that that's stern? Maybe not necessarily cursing you out, but a coach that's stern, that's helping to teach you different things.
Those kids need that stern love and attention from a male figure in their life, you know, filling in for the dad in a lot of these cases. You just don't always want that type of presentation and being cussed out. And, you know, I'm from a different generation of a football player as well. Because when I was growing up, I had a lot of old school minded coaches, and a lot of them, you know, 60, 70 plus probably now. That's all they know. That's how they talk. Yeah. It's not even nothing. It's not even something they even getting on you about. They just cussing. This is because how they communicate to you. But you would like it to at least have some awareness about, you know, when you're talking to kids, to clean your language up. Because if I'm a father, I don't want you talking to my kids like – I don't speak like that at all.
Right.
I don't speak like that to my kids. So why would I allow another man to speak to my son in that manner? First of all, it's teaching them the wrong way to communicate with people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, second of all, it's just showing maybe a lack on your part of as far as words. You know, you got to be able to use your words and find different ways to get your point across without striking fear or demeaning a person while you're coaching them. Because oftentimes that's when it comes. It comes out of frustration, like, why are you not getting this? Or I told you this already.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as a coach, I'm thinking, okay, what's a different drill or a different way I can say this or show it to them so that they understand it and actually receive the coaching that I'm giving them, not making them feel bad about themselves or cussing at them. And some of these kids obviously come from a culture and they understand it, they hear it, so it doesn't affect them. Because I know you mentioned one kid told his mom, I got a mom, I can handle it.
Yeah,
you may be able to handle it, but I'm not going to subject you to it. I need to work on my communication skills so I can coach you better. Because you're going to come across coaches, you know, as you get older, that may not even do that. They may not need that. You may not know how to respond. I don't want to ever come across from a fearful or a demeaning standpoint, and that's how I learn how to strive.
Mm-hmm.
I have to have somebody cuss at me or demean me before I respond.
Yeah.
You know, as a player, I don't want to develop that inside of my son or myself.
What? I never liked it. I never liked it when I was young. Never liked it in the league either.
Right.
And I remember going back and forth with my coach, bro, don't talk to me like that. I'm a grown man with a family like you.
Right.
You know, so. But we're going to we'll get back into this a little bit later. So we're going to get to a break. On the other side of the break, Ross Tucker, one of your former teammates, former guard for the Bills.
Yeah.
Now runs a podcast, does a lot of stuff.
Right.
I mean, this dude is all over the place in the media. So we're going to talk to him a little bit about the Super Bowl, this Jimmy Garoppolo stuff, Josh McDaniels. We can really cover a lot of different things league-wide with Ross Tucker. So it's the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. It's Donald Jones sitting in with Lorenzo Alexander. Lorenzo, you having a little lunch right now?
You had to go. I didn't finish it. I was trying to eat as fast as I can. They took a minute off my break. So
isn't it crazy how they do that, man?
Whatever makes money go around, huh? That's what they're doing it
for. But I'm going to tell you, that extra minute is It's clutch.
Huge.
Yeah,
huge.
You take a minute away, you're like, yo, what?
Yeah, use the bathroom, get it something, you know, a cup of Joe.
You eat. Can't do anything. Yeah, no, you're trying to eat. I mean, sometimes you want to just sit out here and eat and talk at the same time. Like, you know what? I'm going to just go ahead.
Yeah, I thought about it. You know, they ain't paying me, so it ain't like they going to say they're going to fire me. So I really did think about eating right here on set. But I'm going to be more professional than that today.
Is that a shot thrown at?
Huh? I'm going to throw a shot every time I come on for free.
Man. I wonder you're throwing it at Jay. Is that at Jay?
Whoever's listening, whoever's in charge. I don't know who makes all the decisions. Jay, you know, he's up there, but now I don't know if he's cutting the check, so
yeah, nah, he's definitely not cutting the
right.
Check.
So whoever's cutting the check,
Jay ain't
they
the
listen.
Boss. He ain't the boss.
You know, but he talks. He's a middleman. He's the closest I'm gonna get to the boss. Ooh. I haven't talked to the boss yet.
Yeah, well, somebody that is listening,
yeah.
Ross Tucker, one of your former teammates, former Bills guard, and now Sirius XM host of the Ross Tucker NFL podcast. Ross, how you doing?
I'm doing great, and I feel so much better now that I know Lorenzo's not getting paid. I was just about to rip you, Lorenzo, and say, dude, do you really have to try to start taking people's media gigs while you're still going to Pro Bowls and balling out? Really, man? I mean, I need these jobs. You don't need these jobs.
Yeah, man.
So, but now that I know you're not getting paid, I feel a lot better about it.
Yeah, I'm just being a good team guy right now. You know, our guy, John Murphy's out, so I'm just helping out the crew over here. They're good guys.
I like it.
You like it. Hey, Ross, so, you know, we have to thank you for being on the line, but we got to get into the Jimmy Garoppolo contract that just broke. And Lorenzo and I were going back and forth in one of the previous segments, and he was like, you got to lock him up. So what'd you think about the contract?
I thought it was a no-brainer that it would get done. I actually was just at the DMV getting my new license, so I haven't even seen the numbers, but – but I knew that they would get that deal done because it just made way too much sense for both sides. And really, if you're the 49ers, it's unbelievable how much he changed that franchise. I mean, they were having trouble selling tickets. There was no excitement. There was nothing going on with the franchise. They get Garoppolo, and it changed everything. I mean, you can tell me the exact numbers that they just paid him, but my point would be whatever it is, he's worth it, and really any of those top franchise quarterback type guys are. I mean, as much as it's crazy how much more money they make than the rest of us did, they're worth it, man. It makes that much of a difference.
It was a 5-year deal worth $137.5 million. So we don't have the guarantees and all of that stuff, but there's the big number right there, 137.
Yeah, I mean, so that means it's, you know, almost what, $27 million a year?
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah.
That's good for him, man. I mean, we'll see what the guarantees are, but that's the market, and good for Kirk Cousins also.
I was just about to get into that.
Should have multiple suitors.
Right. Yeah. What do you think are some of the top, you know, two or three paces for Kirk Cousins to land this offseason?
You know, that's a good question because I think it depends a lot on what Kirk is looking for. Like, I would think that the New York Jets would give him pretty much anything he wants. If you're the Cleveland Browns, how do you not give him anything he wants? Like, how do you not do that? I mean, you'd immediately win 6 to 8 games and really change the whole mindset of the franchise, change the whole conversation around the franchise. I don't know how you don't do that if you are the Cleveland Browns, but I don't know that that's what Kirk wants. You know, I mean, for all I know, you know, maybe he wants to try to go to Minnesota and try to win a Super Bowl. So I think if it's really important to him to try to win a championship, I think Minnesota and Denver are high on the list. I think if it's really important to him to cash in, I think it's teams like the Jets and the Browns.
You know, when you look at the Redskins, and I kept saying this, and Lorenzo and I have actually talked about this, but what do you think happened in Washington? I mean, Kirk Cousins is a guy who has put up numbers in multiple years. How come they didn't lock him up and they were so eager to just trade for Alex Smith and then pay him?
So the first year, they just weren't sure he was worth it. So they wanted to take a wait-and-see approach. And after the second year, he kind of turned the tables on them. I mean, they tried to get a deal done, but he didn't feel like they – you know, showed him as much love as he was looking for. He didn't feel like he was being respected. So they offered him a deal, and he didn't even come back to them. He wouldn't even negotiate. He never even counter-offered because he didn't really want to be there. I think they realized during this season that he didn't want to be there. He wanted to go elsewhere. And so they knew they needed to make a move to get somebody else. And I give them a lot of credit. I mean, there's a lot of franchises that go decades without having top 10, top 12 type of quarterbacks, and the Redskins figured out a way to go right from one to the next.
Right. Earlier you mentioned about Denver being a contender. You know, Mike Shanahan was there with Kirk Cousins, and obviously has a great relationship with John Elway. Would you think that'll put them, like, top tier, number one, just because of the relationships that are kind of working on the back end of that?
Well, if I'm Denver, I'm going so hard for Cousins, it's not even funny. And I'll tell you why. Number one, we now know that they can't draft quarterbacks. I mean, you know, whether it's Paxton Lynch or whoever, they've had no success drafting quarterbacks. Where he brings value is, I think, because he's John Elway, I think he's able to convince quarterbacks like Peyton Manning and maybe Kirk Cousins to come to Denver. I think he's able to sell it to them. It's kind of like Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft were able to sell McDaniels on staying. I think John Elway can sell quarterbacks on, hey, come here, you'll win a championship like I did, I'll give you everything you need. And really, with a lot of those guys, Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, Von Miller, I mean, Aqib Talib, you know, they're not going to be in the prime of their career very much longer, if they are at all. So I think that if you got Cousins, he'd give them a 2 or 3 year window to try to make another run at this thing with that group of guys.
Hey, Ross, and we're joined on the Subway First Take Hotline by Ross Tucker. Hey, Ross, so sticking with the quarterback theme, but moving to one of the quarterbacks, actually the Super Bowl MVP quarterback, and the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, you'd have to believe that one of these teams or a bunch of these teams is going to be calling them, trying to give something up to trade for Nick Foles. If you're the Eagles, you're sitting in a sweet spot, though. I mean, you have two quarterbacks who are both can be franchise quarterbacks, but both making, what, $7 million a year.
Right.
You got Nick Foles under contract for one more year. So do you even trade him away, or do you keep him knowing that Carson Wentz might not necessarily be ready for the beginning of the season?
So this is a really, really interesting dilemma, because usually the later you wait, the less you're able to get in return, right? So if you do it in March when teams are really trying to get a quarterback, they miss out on Cousins or Keenum or whatever, you might have a lot of value, and he's fresh off the Super Bowl MVP. You could also do it during the draft, theoretically, if teams don't get that guy. I think because of Wentz's injury, they'll wait till the season and at least make sure Wentz gets that first game or those first couple games and is healthy before they do it. And it might be more like a Garoppolo situation, which is certainly doable. You're just typically not going to get as much in terms of draft choice compensation. But I think the Eagles will be okay with that, because they want to make sure with this group of players that they give them every chance to win another one. And if Wentz isn't really ready until October, you don't want to give away those September games. Then they could get another backup quarterback, but he wouldn't be Nick Foles.
Yeah, and kind of staying with Nick Foles, but more of his supporting crew. Obviously, we know Frank Wright is there, and everything that we know that happened with Josh McDaniels and the coach situation. And I saw your tweet. You told the coach organization to thank you later because you mentioned Frank Wright's name. What would make him a great head coach? He has great, obviously, Buffalo ties here. Had the comeback game that still holds the record for in the playoffs. What would make him a great coach, though?
Well, I think that he's been a lot of good places and with a lot of good people now. Not only as a player in Buffalo with Jim Kelly and Marv Levy and Bill Polian and all that stuff, but then, you know, he coached Peyton Manning in Indy for 3 years, and so was a part of what they were doing there. And he was in San Diego with Philip Rivers. Now he's in Philadelphia. He actually reminds me a lot of Doug Peterson in the sense that he's the coordinator for a really good team, but not necessarily calling the plays. You know, people forget Andy Reid was calling the plays in Kansas City, not Doug Peterson. And as a result, people were really skeptical of Doug Peterson as a head coach. Next thing you know, the guy is winning a Super Bowl and out-coaching, in my opinion, Bill Belichick in the biggest game of the year. So, for those reasons, I really think that Frank Reich would be a good head coach candidate. Now, part of it's a personality thing. You know, he's not a Dan Campbell, fire and brimstone type of guy, but neither is Doug Peterson. And I just think being in Philadelphia, being around that, seeing the aggressiveness on fourth down, and having spent time in Indianapolis previously, I think he'd be a real good fit there, especially with Andrew Luck if Andrew's healthy.
What about Josh McDaniels and the way that whole thing went down? I mean, what's your thoughts on that? I think that's a horrible way to do business. What do you think that they actually said to him to get him to come back?
Well, and I know Lorenzo saw this too on my Twitter at Ross Tucker NFL, but what else could they have possibly said that would entice him to stay other than you'll be the next head coach?
Right.
I mean, they could have offered more money, but it's not Indianapolis Colts head coach money. They could have offered, you know, Belichick supposedly will take him under his wing, whatever that means. But they had to say to him, you're going to be the next head coach here, which means you're going to have at least 5 or 6 years. Your 4 kids don't have to leave. You don't have to move. You don't have to go to a different school, you know, a different part of the country. You can stay in your own house. I think that was really enticing to him to stay in an organization that he's familiar with, that he's comfortable with. And I don't think that they had ever said that to him before this. And so when he made the decision earlier, he made the decision not knowing that that was the case. So, you know, whether you blame that on the Patriots for waiting to do that, or you blame it on the Colts, or you blame it on McDaniels, to me it still ultimately is primarily on McDaniels, because he could have gone to them and said, hey, I'm going to take this head job. Is there any chance that I could have the gig when Bill's gone? Could I do it? I'd love it. He waited, and I think the Patriots, we have to think at this point, waited purposely to kind of do what they did to the Colts, which is leave them in a lurch.
Hey, so Ross, I got a couple more questions, and I want to get to this before we let you go. Ball cannon. I need you to break down ball cannon to me. It's like a jugs machine for kids?
Yeah, it's the only thing I know of right now that can actually get kids out of the house and off the video games or their phones or iPads, because you can change the launch angle, you can change the speed. The coolest thing, like the older you are, the more you use the delay feature. You can actually catch passes by yourself. I say it's better than a jugs machine, because a jugs machine, you need someone to be feeding you the balls. For this, you hit the delay, you run your route, and you can catch passes yourself. And all I know is this. I've bought 3 of them. I've seen a bunch of people that have them. Everybody that's ever had one, their reaction has been unanimous that they absolutely love it. So I tell people, go to ballcannon.com, check out the video, and I guarantee it's even better in person, despite the fact that the video itself is amazing. So go to ballcannon.com or anywhere, you know, if you, whatever social media you're on, you can find Ball Cannon there too and check out the videos.
Wow. Well, we have a video playing here in studio, and of course, I'm going to be that guy. You know, I don't know who makes them, what your connection is, but, you know, I have a son, a couple of sons at the house, and I probably would have used this myself. I mean, can I be a brand ambassador? Can I get a free one? I'm just that guy. I got to ask. The worst thing you're going to say to me is no.
No, I hear you. Text me, and we can definitely work something out with your social media and everything else you got going. We can definitely – it's not, I don't own it.
Okay.
But I can get you in touch with the guy. I'm basically a consultant for them. I can get you in touch with the guy, and we can try to work something out. And all I can tell you is your boys would love it. And the only thing I know of, too, that, like, you can play with from, like, 4 to 44. I say the strike zone's usually 5 to 15, but, I mean, I play with it. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
I play with it with my kids. They're 4 and 5. They love to shoot it to me and have me try to catch it. And then they try to catch. They're not able to catch it yet, but after they miss, they pick it up and sprint back. It's awesome.
O lineman kids. Well,
yeah, definitely. hey Ross, when Lorenzo sends you that text message, let's try to work on 2 of them. All right, I have a kid that's catching footballs too. I got to be that guy.
You
want to be that guy? I'm going to be that guy.
I played with Ross.
I know you.
No? Yeah, well, I can't believe. I mean, Donald, I'm sure you've heard the story, but when I was with Lorenzo, he was an offensive lineman trying to take my job, which I really did not appreciate.
Wow,
right?
He should have stayed on the defense. I mean, the guy's taking my job as a backup old lineman when he ends up being a Pro Bowl linebacker.
It's crazy. He's trying to take, and now he's trying to take your job in the media, right?
It's the same situation.
It's the same situation.
I'm just being a good teammate. I'm just trying to help my team win, man.
I finally have a gig, another gig, Ball Cannon, where I'm doing consulting, and he just wants to get money for free for that.
Right.
I mean, I get some of that money, Lorenzo. I see where you make a year.
Hey, well, you know what it is. You got to use the platform, man. I'm not going to play forever, so I might as well get the free stuff while I can,
hey,
you know.
I'm with you.
Hey, but listen, I mean, another platform. Ross, you're already on this platform, which is the media. Lorenzo, I think at some point would like to get into the media whenever he decides to walk away from the game. But, Ross, I saw a tweet from you. This was yesterday's tweet. Now, this is you, I guess, talking to your daughter. And your daughter said, Daddy, do you have a job? And you said, yes, honey. What do you think I do all day? And your daughter said, I thought you just talk about football. And you said she might have a point. Right. Since Lorenzo's getting into this thing, explain that to him a little bit.
You know what? It's so funny because in my daughter's kindergarten, they're learning about jobs and the tools you use at your job. So a dentist has come in, a teacher's come in, and literally – I was in there at 1. So I did that, drove over to DMV, got my new license. So I brought in my helmets, a shoulder pad, some footballs, and I brought in my microphone and my press pass from the Super Bowl. So she's learning about jobs, and she sees me walking over to my detached garage with mesh shorts and flip-flops on, and she's starting to wonder whether or not I actually have one. So that's why she asked me that question. And she knows I talk about football. She didn't know that was a job. And, frankly, I'm not sure it is.
Hey, well, Ross, thank you for joining us, man.
Absolutely. Anytime. And anytime you guys can have Lorenzo on and not pay him is a good day.
That's a great day, right?
Wow.
Yes.
Now we're going to promote that, huh?
Oh, man. Ross Tucker actually joins us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Ross, a former friend of yours, former Bills guard, now the Ross Tucker podcast on Sirius XM. And if you want a ball cannon, go to ballcannon.com, which, I mean, it looks like fun when you watch the video.
It looks great. I'm going to use one. I'm going to get my son something. So when the days where I'm hurt, I want one.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, man, just go push that button, man. Put the button, the delay button. Have me sold.
Oh, man, we'll be back. It's the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White. He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. McCoy cuts to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown, Buffalo.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Welcome back to the John Murphy Show. Donald Jones sitting in with Lorenzo Alexander. So the big Jimmy Garoppolo deal just came down.
Yes, it did.
We were talking to Ross about the whole thing with Kirk Cousins. Obviously now, you know, nobody knows what's going to happen with Kirk Cousins because the Redskins traded for Alex Smith.
Right.
So, Alex, and they paid him.
Yes, they did.
He is their guy moving forward, at least the next four. I think he got a 4-year deal. Garoppolo got a 5-year deal. So, which one of those guys do you think will be the most successful this year? I don't want to say moving forward because Jimmy Garoppolo has a long way to go. So, just this year.
I'm going to say Jimmy. I like what they're doing out in San Francisco. Obviously, they had that 5-0 run this year to end the season, you know, coming in the offseason, getting the comfort level. A better understanding of the offense. Really love Kyle Shanahan as a play caller and what he's able to do. And I say that, you know, with the Redskins, I'm not quite sure, you know, what's going to happen as they kind of move forward with Jay Gruden. Will he be able to implement an offense where Alex Smith can be productive like he was with Andy Reid?
Yeah.
And there's always something happening there for whatever reason. When I played after I left, there's just always something, some, you know, unspoken, I don't know, like stress or cloud around the building that creates distraction from football. And that always harps on their season. Obviously, they had a couple of playoff teams within that run since I've been gone, but it's just always something around it. So I like what they're doing out in San Francisco. I grew up a San Francisco 49er fan, so it'd be great just to kind of see them to kind of restore back to what they used to be back in when I was growing up. So we'll see what happens with him.
Definitely see what happens with him. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. Donald Jones, Lorenzo Alexander sitting in. I guess we're both sitting in for John Murphy. Or I'm sitting in for John Murphy. You're sitting in for me. That's kind of how we do this thing on the show. We're actually going to take a call. This guy, John, which is calling from Dallas, has been sitting on the line for a little while. So, John, you're on the air with me, Donald Jones, and Lorenzo Alexander.
Hey, guys. Enjoy the show. I wanted to kind of throw out a free agent question, but I have a couple of comments since I've been driving. I come up with some things that you guys were talking about.
Okay.
One of them, you know, talking about Sammy Watkins, I definitely, as a Bills fan, would love to see him possibly be offered something. Well, that's just my thought. One of the things I was thinking about, though, is the free agency. When, you know, you talk about someone being a free agent coming up, and let's say, for instance, Stephon Gilmore. Everybody knew that he was going to be probably overpriced for the Bills to sign last year. When a player comes up like that, do the Bills even, or a team, do they offer that guy a contract at all, hoping for a hometown discount, or do they just accept the fact that they're not going to be able to sign him because it's way out of their budget for the foreseeable future? One other thing, though, before you guys answer that, though, I really want to say that I feel like you're a Buffalo guy. I feel like you're, like, you know, your persona, Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas, you know, Freddie Jackson, you're that kind of guy. My question is for you. You've played with a few other teams. Are you as liked in the other areas that you've played before? Are you more popular in Buffalo than you've been on any other team before? Because my thoughts are that your future after football is in Buffalo because of your persona and the way that the fans have really taken a liking to you. That's all I've got, man. I really appreciate you guys taking the call.
He basically was asking you,
am I going to leave it when I'm
gonna
done?
You're going to replace me.
Oh. Yeah, move over, Donald. Here I come, baby. Exactly. I'm about to shut it down. You know, I would like to say I'm well-liked in every city that I've played in. I haven't changed who I am based on where I'm playing. Play hard. Every team and every organization has given me the opportunity, and I think fans just naturally gravitate to that. Being a humble guy, blue-collar guy that's been undrafted and kind of grinded from the bottom to the top, I think people recognize how hard that is and really embrace it, and they also see what I do in the community. So I've been well-liked, I think, in most places. I would say this place has probably happened the quickest, and I think a lot of that had to do with having, obviously, a breakout season that makes people even dig in, oh, who is this guy even a little bit more? Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I've had success and been liked, and, you know, I try to embrace every fan base that I've been a part of. Obviously, Buffalo is unique in itself and what it offers here, but it's been great, obviously. I don't know if I'm going to live here when I'm done. That's more so of my wife's decision than mine, because when I'm done, it's her show. You know, she's followed me around the last 10 years for the most part. And then he had one other question about
free
agency.
Yeah, it was about free agency and when players are coming up.
And it depends on each situation. Sometimes a team will go dark on a guy because they know he's no longer in their plans. They may want to move on as well. But sometimes they will just throw out a deal. And it doesn't have to be a big name guy either. When I was in Washington and before I signed with Arizona, they offered me a deal just to see if you would take it, a flyer deal. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they play on that loyalty family thing that is preached, but when it comes down to free agency and contracts, it's all about business. And that's really their ploy. You know, can we get this guy for cheap? We're not, you know, we'll try loyalty. That's a tactic, but that's not really where they're coming from. So it just depends on, you know, if they think they can get you, if they see you still playing with them in the future, whether or not they will offer you a deal.
Talk about going dark on a guy. The Super Bowl game. Malcolm Butler doesn't see – I think he saw one snap. Special teams, yeah. So he doesn't see a defensive snap at all. Now, he's been their top corner, top two corner on that team since he made the play in the Super Bowl.
Right.
Against the Seahawks a few years ago to win them the Super Bowl. They went dark on him in this Super Bowl. I mean, for him to not see a snap on defense is crazy, especially when you're getting roasted. And the guy that you put in, the young kid, it just can't stop anybody. You've been having Malcolm Butler lock up on Antonio Brown, who is arguably the best receiver in the game, top two, top three receiver in the game. Lock on him one-on-one every time you play the Steelers. And then in the Super Bowl, you try to say, oh, it's not discipline. It was all about matchups. It was about matchups.
It makes no sense.
What are we talking?
Everybody across the country know that's a BS answer. Right. Something is really more to this story, and they have such a tight grip on the media or even just the player in the locker room to where nobody will speak out about what really happened.
Yeah.
Is crazy, because as a player on that team, the Super Bowl, if we win this, and I'm thinking to myself currently, I'm done. Yeah. I'm walking away. I made it. I got my championship.
Right.
And you telling me we're not going to put our best players out there because of something relational that happened or something? I don't care if he missed curfew. Yeah. I don't care if he was out partying.
Right.
He ready. He a gamer. I want him. I want the best. Especially after we say the young guy's not. Throw him in there. We need to make some switches. I'm trying to win one. Right. I'm not getting back here. I'm done. I need it.
It's crazy.
So I would be upset.
Even if you're not walking away from the game, even if you're not retiring, you don't know if you'll ever be back in the Super Bowl. I don't care if you got Tom Brady on the team.
Well, yeah, I mean, they kind of go every year, so they used to it.
They used to it. Come on, we here now.
Right.
You know, guys who on that team that have never been to the Super Bowl, you got a bunch of guys that have been there.
Yeah.
Guys that have never been, they're looking at it like, yo, what's up, man? I'm trying to win this game, and this dude is getting real. I know that guys were on the sideline or in the game like, yo, looking at Belichick, can't say anything because he'll cut you during the game.
Right. Yeah. You want to sit next to him?
Right, exactly. Can't say anything. But they thinking in their minds like, yo, come on, man. You got to put him in so we can slow this offense down a little bit.
Yeah, I wonder how much that has to do with him having so many already. I wonder if this was his first Super Bowl appearance, talking about Belichick.
Oh, yeah.
Would he do that same type of move? But he has, what, five?
Yeah, he has six? Five as a head coach, right?
Okay.
As a head coach.
He has multiple Super Bowls.
He won one with under Parcells.
Okay. You have that many rings. So, obviously, you're there. The game means a lot. But it's not like I'm trying to get in. You know, his legacy is already engraved in NFL history and as being the best coach of all time. I wonder if that plays a big part in why you can sit a guy. Because a young coach, a guy just first getting there, first opportunity, you throwing everything you got at him. I don't care if the dude came late to the game that day.
Right.
You about to play. We'll deal with this
after.
You're not getting paid or something, whatever. We're not going to extend you, but I'm about to get my ring. I'm not going to hurt the rest of the guys that have worked so hard to get there so you can prove a point or I can prove a point. I would have been livid on the sideline. I don't know.
Crazy.
And I'm talking from the outside in, but if I was up there – I'd have been wrecking havoc on the sideline.
Especially as a vet.
Right. Yeah, what is wrong with Zone, like, man? He's out of character.
Yeah.
It must be something happening. What is going on?
The announcer's Lorenzo Alexander is livid on the sideline. Yeah. I've never seen anybody go at Bill Belichick like that.
I would have flipped
out. Nah, we about to lose this game. Yeah. You're trying to prove a point? You all up in his face. That's funny, man. I mean, it's crazy that they did not put him in the game, especially when everybody on the team knows. I mean, they tried to trade him last year.
Right.
In the offseason. They ain't want him back.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up putting a first-round tender on him to bring him back because they – let me tell you something. He's made a big play to win them the Super Bowl. He's been their number one or number two corner. They didn't have the guy who went to – I always forget names. He went out to Denver. Aqib Talib.
Yeah.
So he was their number one guy.
Right.
Especially last year. He was their number one guy. And you end up tendering him instead of paying him. Then – you bring in Stephon Gilmore
and pay him.
I mean, that's a total slap in the face. So everybody on the team knows he ain't going to be back next year.
Right.
Malcolm Butler knows he ain't going to be back next year. Bill Belichick knows he won't be on this team next year.
Right.
So why not just win this game? I'll have six Super Bowls, and nobody has that. You know, he's already the best, probably the best to ever do it, but I think that was a horrible decision on his part, just an ego thing. And I think that's what you're getting into right now.
Right.
Trying to prove a point because we won all of these Super Bowls. It's always been the next man up. You could go ahead and sit on the bench. It'll be the next man up. It didn't work out in this game.
No, not at all. Not at all. And, I mean, you know what? That you mentioned ego. That goes on a lot more than you think around the league as far as with coach to coach, coach to player, you know, coach to ownership. A lot of teams would do significantly better if people could be in the room and not have an ego. And let's not do it my way. Let's do it the best way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I don't know what it is. I mean, I guess you're dealing with a whole bunch of alpha males, and I got to be the guy, I got to be it right. But when you win the championship, well, in Belichick's case, he's going to get the credit anyway. It don't really matter.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah. I don't get why you have to prove a point. I don't get it. I would be so mad. It don't even make sense to me.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure some more stuff will probably hopefully comes out. I just need to know. Well, it doesn't even matter what it is, because nothing is that important or that detriment to the team to where he shouldn't be able to play.
You know, and I don't know here what would happen with Coach McDermott. Nobody knows that. You'd have to be in that situation. But he seems like more of a guy who, he has his discipline and the way he wants things done, but just an open book policy where he'll talk to everybody about.
Right.
You know, so you don't just leave guys out like, no, it's my decision, that's it. And he's going to sit him on the bench the whole game.
Right.
And you can't even, as a player, go up and talk to him.
Nah, I don't get it. But I know a couple of groups that is happy is the Bills fans. I know they probably he's not in there. And they getting ate up. He's not putting him in it. Great job, Bill.
What?
Probably tweeting him during the game. Great job. Great decision, man. You finally learned how to coach.
I'm not even going to lie. I mean, I've been here long enough. And I think it's not even just Bills fans. Fans across the league do not want to see him win. So everybody got so much satisfaction out of the picture of him sitting down after the game was over.
Yeah.
After that Hail Mary, he's sitting down there. It's just like looking up, and it's like he knew he just lost the game. I mean, I feel like everybody just was like, yes, I love to see that picture right there. Tom Brady sitting down losing the game because he's won so many. He's been there so many times. But the quarterback on the other side who won the Super Bowl MVP, who was carving up Rhodes, number 25, just kept going at him.
Oh, yeah.
They had that interesting play, the Philly play. And I think we actually have the sound. And this is from inside the NFL on Showtime. And this is where you hear Nick Foles actually call the play and suggest we should run this. So here's the sound from inside the NFL.
We're going for it right here. We're going for it right here.
Philly, Philly?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. Hold on. Here we go. Hold on.
Philly special. Ready?
Foles in the gun.
Here we go.
Lemon to his right.
Tonight!
Now lines up behind Foles.
Kill!
Foles.
Lane!
Moves to the right. It goes directly to Clement. Reverses it. The pass goes into the end zone. And it is a touchdown by Nick Foles.
Let's go!
Now, it was a lot of guts by Doug Peterson to call the play. Go for two and actually call the play. But you hear Nick Foles say, Philly? And the reports were, I was talking to Chris Brown out here on this show yesterday, the reports were that they were going to run this against the Vikings. They didn't need to, number one, because they blew them out. But, you know, they had this in the game plan for the Vikings, but they decided to sit on it because they got the play from the Bears when the Bears ran it against the Vikings. So they felt like the Vikings would be prepared for it.
Right.
And the Vikings, obviously, or the Bears actually got it from Navy. You know, it's a copycat. It's all copycat stuff. But for him to go and suggest it and the coach to say, yeah, let's run that, it just shows a lot of trust in the players.
Well, yeah, he's shown up. I mean, Nick Foles isn't a rookie, spring chicken. He's not the backup coming off the bench. You know, he's been playing and been preparing, and he trusts them, and they probably executed in practice.
Right.
And then the players coming over suggesting it, so it was great confidence in it, because at that time you want your players to believe in what you call it. Because that's the worst thing as a player being on the field and the coach calls something and everybody goes, what is he doing? The play is dead from there. It don't matter if they give it to you and you're not going to execute.
Yeah, yeah.
So just to have that confidence, the player is suggesting it, your leader on the field, he's okay, yeah, that makes sense. That's a great call right there. They had prepared for it and they was ready to go for it. And it was actually a great design play. Actually running it to their right side, the defensive left. You have a young guy over there that was here, Lee, hasn't seen a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
So it worked out perfect to try to take advantage of their personnel and somebody's inexperience of being on the field. And it probably would have got most guys anyway.
Yeah.
And then it was great because earlier the Patriots tried to run the same exact play, obviously a little different tweak on it, but didn't execute.
Right.
And they come down and execute the special play. So it was just awesome to kind of see them out execute the Patriots at their own game.
Now, I played on the offensive side. You did too. But I play receiver, right? So I don't know if you, when you played offensive line, if you were ever like, coach, we should run this. But I know as a receiver, when I'm running routes, I'm like, coach, I'm telling you, we should run this. And Chan Gailey, who was here, the head coach at the time, he was also the offensive coordinator. Yeah, we should run that, you know. And it took us a couple of years before we had that confidence in me that I'm actually seeing things and I'm not just like, coach, I'm open.
I should run the ball.
Yeah,
right,
exactly. Yeah. So on the defensive side of the ball, do you ever say that to Leslie Frazier?
Yeah, same exact way. Whether I'm saying to Leslie or Bob or was Mike Waffle before he retired, now it'll be Bill. I see this protection they're giving us. Let's run this game, or let's run this blitz. Mm. It's there. It's open. And it just goes from, again, them trusting me as a veteran. Kyle Williams has that same power. Micah Hyde has that same type of insight as well. Guys they trust and have been around the league for a little while, understanding how schemes work and know your playbook. You'd be like, yeah, we should run this or make an adjustment in the game. And sometimes it comes free and you end up making a big play.
You ever been with the coach, and you don't have to say any names, but ever been with the coach that's like, don't really want to hear anything that the players have to say? Back to the ego.
Oh, yeah. I know this guy, yeah. And, Greg Williams is like that. I mean, just the type of coach he is. That's who he is.
Fans here know.
Right, yeah. He coached here, so, I mean, that's fine. Everybody has their own personality, and you know a coach who you can go and suggest something to, and that was a guy that you – didn't want to, especially from my perspective. When I was with him, I was a young guy, so I wasn't even getting close to saying anything to him. But generally speaking, Greg Williams did what he wanted to do.
He did what he wanted to do?
Yeah.
That's funny. But let me tell you, though, and you were talking about when a play comes into the huddle and you're like, oh, what is that? I remember there were a lot of plays that came into the huddle, especially wide receivers. I mean,
right.
You know, we're out there. We want the ball anyway.
Yeah.
And I remember Stevie and I – it was like almost every play, especially if it was a run play. Why do you keep calling run plays, man? Throw the ball. And Fitz is coming out of like, shut up. Stop talking. Yeah. And we're like, man, we need to throw the ball. Like, yeah, it's just a receiver thing, man. We're trying to get the ball. Everybody else is just haters.
Throw me the damn ball, Keyshawn Johnson.
That's right.
Yeah,
just throw divas, us the ball.
Man.
I mean, we the ones. We could change the game right now. Y'all want to run the ball and – chip at it and go 4 yards, 5 yards.
Just block somebody and maybe it'll go 90.
Nah.
Yeah, that's the issue.
Or you could throw it and we can go 90.
Maybe. Yeah, all right. You think you're always open. Block somebody and let the running back get loose and it's going to open the game up for you. Y'all just so short-sighted, man. It's all about me when you're talking about receivers, man.
Really?
It is. Me.
What receivers, when you were on the offensive side of the ball, any receivers like that? Because you were with, like, Santana Moss, right?
Yeah, Santana, he wasn't outspoken like that. Who else did I play with? We didn't have any guys that was really – it's so long ago.
Yeah.
is Brian Lloyd? I think it's Brian Lloyd. Was that the Chicago Bears, 85, Lloyd? I don't know, his last name is Lloyd. Brian Lloyd? I don't know. It's too long ago, man. I'm old.
Too many Lloyds, too.
Too many teams. I mean, that was 2008. I mean, that's almost 10 years ago.
Yeah, it is 10 years ago. You were in Arizona. You were on the defensive side of the ball.
Right, yeah, I never did any offense. Last time I played offense was 2008 or 9 with the Redskins.
Right. And when you were on the defensive side of the ball in Arizona, now Larry Fitzgerald is a guy that you want to throw the ball to.
Yeah.
But he ain't the one asking you for the ball.
No,
I mean,
he's
that
not
dude
like that
is
either.
The most humble dude I've ever
been around.
But
you know what he does, though? He blocks.
He does.
Yeah, you know, he does, and then he understands the game that eventually is going to come to him. So I'm just saying you might want to mimic the best. I know you and Stevie was good.
If you want to be great,
you want to mimic the best. So that's for all the kids out there, man, just pull up some Larry Fitzgerald highlights, game film, watch his interviews, how he carries himself, how humble he is. Donald just admitted to that. Selfless guy and probably had one of the best careers as a receiver ever. Definitely a Hall of Famer. So definitely check out Larry Fitzgerald, man.
Well, you know, I was blocking.
It didn't sound like it.
No. I was blocking. I was used a lot in blocking, matter of fact.
When I asked you, you said, like, yeah, I don't want to block.
I don't want to block. They would have to bring that back up.
You pretty much said.
Now you're saying pretty much.
Whatever. Said it. Did it. That's what you implied. Whatever, however word you used, that you didn't block. I hope they pull this audio and post it later. And especially your body language tells a lot of stuff. When I said, he was like, yeah, or they could just throw the ball and go 90 yards. So when you say stuff like that, that means you didn't block.
Well, the reason I'm saying that is because, you know, there were two instances where I was blocking, and our running back, Fred Jackson, I'm blocking, runs up my legs, high ankle sprain, right? Same season, I come back. Now we're down in Miami. I'm blocking. Runs up my leg again. Same ankle, same everything.
Fred?
So I was like, Fred.
Well, it sounds like you have a Fred issue.
I don't know. What's going on? I mean.
And it sounds like you're passing the buck. That's receiver. See, I mean, I'm reading this book right now, and it talks just about some of this stuff that people oftentimes do. When things go well, it's me. When something bad happens, you know what? It was Freddie ran up my leg twice, same play, same ankle. So that's why I don't block.
I'm just saying.
See,
no,
I
still block, but I'm going to tell you what I did, though.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I would block, but, you know, I mean, DBs.
You wouldn't block.
I was blocking. I was in front of the guy, but I was looking back at the running back.
That's not doing anybody any favors. You're not blocking. You're watching the running back
run. The DB is watching it, too. The DBs really don't want to get in there.
It doesn't. Safeties do. I mean, that's oftentimes
I didn't have the safeties. I always had the corners.
Okay.
You know, the design of our offense, we didn't go in and get the safeties unless you were playing the slot position.
Okay.
You know, so, yeah, you know what?
I have some access. When was your last year you played?
13.
Okay, I'm going to look up some 13 film on you. I got it on here. I got Exos, baby. I'm going to look you up. And then I'll come here with a full report on DJ. Because right now you just talk a lot of stuff, and nobody can look you up. I say something, people going to go look me up and say, look at you, trash, or something, you know? So I'm going to do that. So go ahead, go to break, however you do it, you the pro, and then we'll come back and finish this thing up.
All right, well, Lorenzo just tossed a break. So it's the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the John Murphy Show. Donald Jones sitting in with Lorenzo Alexander. We were going back and forth, arguing. I play on the offensive side. Lorenzo plays on defense. You know, I think some people feel like we don't have a good relationship.
No, that's why we can talk to each other like this.
Right, exactly.
We're good.
Know, so those of you who might think that, we're good over here. Hey, so we're going to take a call right now. We got Ian calling from Medina. Ian, you're on the line. Lorenzo Alexander, Donald Jones.
Hey, guys. I just had a quick theory about Josh McDaniels. I don't like the Patriots just as much as the next Bills fan, but I don't necessarily think it's his fault or the Patriots' fault. Before the Super Bowl, there was a lot of talk of Belichick. You know, he's wearing his father's hat. He's showing more emotion. Maybe this is it for him. You know, maybe he's done after this. Then they lost the Super Bowl. And I think maybe Belichick would have been done. But since the Super Bowl, they lost. Maybe he's like, you know what? I only got another year in me. Maybe he gave his notice and told the Patriots, hey, you know, I'm going to be done here. And maybe the Patriots said, whoa, we can't lose McDaniels then because we don't know who's going to be available in a year.
You know what? I can understand maybe that sentiment. If there weren't position coaches who have already signed their contracts and have to uproot their families. I could maybe understand, he left the organization out. They do that to each other all the time. Mm-hmm. But when you do it to your guys that have to move now for at least a year, because whoever they bring in may not like them, and then they have
and
to move again.
Exactly.
So now you're talking about families that are being impacted. Not just
other jobs.
Right. Left other jobs, came, signed, or wherever they were at, and now, you're not coming?
Yeah.
So that's the issue I have with it. I don't care about the Colts per se. It's more about the other men and their families that had to move and be uprooted. And now, yes, they have a job, but there's no security. I mean, because this is a good old boys club. You know, they bring in their friends, people that they know, who they trust, because that's how they're going to live and die, you know, from a head coach's point of view. And you're trying to get as many of those guys around you as possible. So some of those guys that was coming with Josh, now they're like, you're out of a job. You know, next year we're going to move on. So now you got to uproot your family again.
It's horrible business on Josh's perspective. And it's also horrible for whatever coach that has to go in there, because now you're inheriting two coaches that, who knows, you might not even like them.
Right.
Those two guys. Or you know you're going to want to bring in guys at some point, which probably will be after this season. So you're going to have to look at these two guys and say, sorry, but you got to move again. You know, that was just bad business.
Right, yeah. All the way around.
It was bad business. And the only way, and this is in my perspective, the only way Josh does that is knowing that he's going to be the head coach after Bill Belichick. That's the only way you do that, because you're never going to get another head coach. What organization is going – I mean, you never know, but what organization will hire you that you've done that to another organization?
Somebody would if they need you bad enough or they have a position that needs to be filled. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, I mean, they do it so much to each other. I think they just, okay.
They're used to it.
Oh, it happens, you know. A couple of years, he wins wherever he's at. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's the high commodity again. Oh, we need that. At the end of the day, winning trumps a lot of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're able to bring somebody in regardless of what they've done in their past, because some of these coaches don't have the greatest of reputations as far as being people and relationships and how they handle their coaches or the coaches' families and all that stuff, but they win. And so people see that and say, okay, yeah, we want you to lead our football team because we know whatever you do as a coach is going to help us win.
Yeah.
And so maybe the coach won't ever offer him a job again, but somebody else around the league may say, yeah, we would love you to be our head coach. Because even all the owners, they don't necessarily like each other. I mean, right. They have their own little cliques and feuds and go back and forth about a lot of stuff, too, that people don't know about. So one of the owners that don't like Jim Irsay or whoever's over there, you know, when they comes up again, be like, whatever.
Bob Kraft.
Yeah, yeah, right. Like you're right. Yeah, we were talking. All right, whatever.
Chris Brown was saying he feels like Bob Kraft, or was it Steve Tasker? One of them. That Bob Kraft looks at being an owner a little bit different now than when he first became an owner in this league because of so many different things that have happened with his organization and the NFL trying to come down on them, Deflategate, Spygate, whatever the case was. Especially the last one is suspending his quarterback, which is like his fifth son.
Yep.
He feels like Bob Kraft is looking at this thing like, this is my – I'm going to do what I want to do for my organization.
Right.
And I don't really care about the rest of you owners out there.
Yep.
I still, you know, be an outspoken owner for the league, but I'm going to do what's best for my organization.
Of course. And we don't know which owners was behind the door saying, hey, Goodell, you need to punish your boy.
Yeah.
You need to do your thing. And then we also saw what's the owner down in not Dimeroff, Atlanta. Who's that? What's his owner's name down there?
Arthur Blank.
Arthur Blank. He was upset about the rings, how the rings were made, and what they put on them. You know, the score at the time before they started coming back.
Yeah.
So I mean, they take digs at each other all the time. So I mean, it's bad what Josh did, but somebody will give him another opportunity if it wasn't the Patriots to coach.
Billionaire beef. Right. Billionaire beef. Joker's fighting. Man, would I give to see some of them actually in a brawl in an owner's meeting.
Like, oh, the owners are fighting. That's crazy. Right. It might move a lot slower than you think, man. There's some old dudes in there, man.
For real.
Let me pay somebody to fight for me.
Oh, that's funny. Hey, so we do this segment almost every day. We do this segment, NFL True or False. We have a couple of different questions, league-wide stuff. And we figure out if you feel like it's true or if it's false, right? So we're going to do this. Our first one, the anthem protest, which was a big thing. That feels like it was so long ago. It really does.
For us, it was.
The anthem protests are the biggest reason for the NFL ratings drop. True or false?
False. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously the NFL ratings are down, but you can look around just TV in general, all the shows, anything you look at, ratings are down. And that's mainly because TV and how we watch TV is being consumed differently. Obviously, you got streaming, internet, all those things. But if you look at the top 10 shows still, it's all NFL games, NFL related, you know, things. So it's down, but it has nothing to do with the anthem. It's just the way people are consuming.
I'm going to go false on this one as well for the reasons that you just stated. You feel like the way this game is consumed is going to change? I know they just signed a big deal with Fox.
Right, yeah, it's definitely being consumed.
In the next 5-10 years.
Especially with fantasy football and everything. You have your phone, you have your tablets, you have the internet. I mean, you're just in different places where you can't traditionally sit down in front of a TV and watch it, but you're still being informed and taking in the games. And so they're trying to figure out different ways. That's why you have people like Amazon, Twitter, all these, you know, tech companies, you know, kind of jumping on that and want to stream certain things, testing things out. You know, let's give one Thursday night game to Twitter and see how many people watch, or Facebook Live, different things of that nature, because they are trying to tap into some other ways. People are just consuming content in general.
Right. I think I agree with you. And Murph and I went back and forth on this. I think this was right after the Amazon thing came down before the season. And I was saying, you know, I watch it. There are times I watch games on my phone.
Right.
And I think one of the questions that we had was, what's the best way to consume a game? And I was like, you know, obviously the best way to consume a game, for me, the best way is on the couch. At home, on the couch, because if you have surround sound or not, but just being able to hear the commentators, hear what they're saying, all of that stuff, I'm not really one to go to football games.
Right.
Especially now that I'm not playing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to a football game. I'm not trying to freeze out there or any of that stuff. But I will watch a game on my phone if I'm not home. You know, you can do it like that now. And I feel like it's going that way now. And it was just funny, him and I going back and forth. But the next question was really on what we were just talking about before that, Josh McDaniels. You feel like the Colts are better off without Josh McDaniels? True or false?
True. And mainly because his heart wasn't all the way in there anyway. He, mm-hmm. I mean, something obviously better came along, and he's available. So he said, I don't, you know, I'm staying right where I want to be. So I think with that said, you never want to have somebody who is running your team day to day over your, you know, scouting department, whatever his role would have been there. I'm pretty sure he would have had a lot of power doing it half-heartedly. Only if, you know, Bill would have, you know, walked away and I could have been a Patriots head coach.
Yeah.
It's not, I got this opportunity. I'm Colts all the way in now. It's always, what if he would have, or what if we would have, you know, it's not his whole heart and his passion and focus is not dialed in. And you're only going to get some of Josh McDaniels. You're not going to get all of him.
Right. Yeah, I go true just for the same reasons you said there. He's just not all the way in. And if you're not all the way into that thing, I don't want to play for you.
Right.
If you're not all the way in, because I don't know you're making some crazy decisions. Yeah. Like, what are we doing?
Right.
And as a fan base, you know that your head coach is not all the way in this thing. So nothing would have really gone. I mean, he might have won some games, but if you're not all the way in, you might as well just go ahead and let him go. Now, we talked about this yesterday, Chris Brown and I. How hard is it to replace a Bill Belichick?
Wow. I mean, that's significant. I mean, because right now he plays GM and head coach. So the way he brings people in, the way he evaluates talent and drafts guys, is unique to him.
Mm-hmm.
And people have allowed him to do what he's capable of doing and show constantly is because he's won a lot of games. So the next person that steps in that role is not going to be afforded that same type of, freedoms just because they don't have the track record.
Yeah.
So you have to start all over again, and now you work, and we talk about egos, so now you have a GM and head coach again. So now are they on the same page?
Yeah.
The organizations that I've been around that have done the best, that have succeeded, when you have a GM and a head coach, people that stay in their lane, obviously the coach has a say-so, but the GM is the one that's drafting guys and the coach is the one that's coaching them up. And everybody aren't able to do that or aren't able to see eye to eye and respect each other's opinions. You know, somebody may say something and they take it the wrong way and it's just tension. And when that happens, the whole organization can feel it. The decisions you make aren't together and coherent.
Yeah.
So I may bring a player in, but I'm not going to coach him. Or, you know, you didn't get my guy, so now I'm upset. And that stuff messes with the building.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a hard task and to figure out that right dynamic, because obviously I think Josh has been other places, Denver, and I don't know exactly what the dynamic there was, but it didn't work out well.
Mm-hmm.
So what is going to set him up, you know, that's going to make sense? He can't hopefully he doesn't make the same mistake he made in Denver.
So I look at it like – it's hard to replace because, you know, things are going to be different. He's going to run it differently and for everything you're talking about. But also, they lost Jimmy Garoppolo, and he's going to lose Tom Brady here in the next couple of years. So,
well, Tom is playing until he's 45, right? So he got five more.
Yeah, we'll see
now,
about
how
that.
Well, he's playing, you know, whenever that wall, whatever. But he hasn't dropped off yet.
hasn't dropped off yet, you know. But it's at some point he will, you know. We'll see if he can win without Tom Brady and Jimmy G.
Well, he has a TB12 diet, man. You got to know about that, man.
Are you on that diet? Like,
no. I do my Zoe.
You got the Zoe
57 diet.
The Zoe 57 diet.
I mean, well, I got to work on branding.
You got to market that out here in Buffalo,
man. You know,
a lot of people out here wings.
Yeah, I can't do it. I got fat here doing that.
Everybody out here eating wings. Like, y'all want to look like me?
Yeah.
Get on the Zoe 57 diet.
Right.
All right, last one. Eagles will become the NFL's next dynasty.
Ooh. So we're talking about dynasty. We're not talking about Patriots dynasty because that's never going to be done again, right?
That's rough. I don't think that can be done again.
So you're saying they're going to win another Super Bowl? Yeah, what is a dynasty?
Is that three Super Bowls in a certain amount of time?
Like you're talking about like 49ers, Dallas Cowboys, Pittsburgh Steelers.
Let's just say within a decade.
That's hard. I mean, free agency messes the game up so much. See, in those times, I mean, players even still then, was even though it was free agency, I believe, in 93, those teams kind of stuck together. It took a while before it just started, you know, kind of like the Wild Wild West when it's guys coming up all the time. So I am – because who – no.
No?
I mean, I think it's hard. I mean, Wentz, I just got to see another – it's too small of a sample size.
Right.
And they didn't do it with Wentz. They did it with Nick Foles, who won it.
True.
I mean, so it's too small of a sample. So I got to see them put another good year together before I say yes. But would we consider Seattle Seahawks a dynasty?
They only won one.
But they went to two. They were really good.
People look at it, you got to win multiple Super Bowls to be considered
multiple.
A dynasty.
So if they had won two, would they have been it? If they would have ran the ball with Marshawn,
they would have been
a dynasty.
All right, I go false on this one as well. You got to see more of Carson Wentz. It could be under Carson Wentz, but we'll have to see more about that. NFL True or False brought to you by Yanti Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. We'll be back to wrap this thing up. It's the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the John Murphy Show, the last segment of the John Murphy Show with Lorenzo and myself. Hey, Lorenzo, so we were just talking about dynasties and the Eagles. Will they be the next dynasty? So here's a question, because I was saying I feel like you got to win one or a couple to be considered a dynasty. The Bills, back in the day, went to four straight Super Bowls.
They're a dynasty.
That's a dynasty.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't win but that's – four straight.
Yeah, that
has never been repeated.
Even the Patriots haven't done.
No, yeah, that's a dynasty.
The Patriots went to what, two straight? They never been to three straight, right?
No.
So four straight Super Bowls. That's a dynasty, even though they didn't win it.
That was a legit team too.
That was a legit team.
some players.
Did you watch that that 30 for 30? The two Bills, or whatever it was called, with Bill Belichick and Bill Parcells?
Oh, no.
No,
I never saw that.
I saw, like, some snippets of it. It came on last week, I think.
Watch a lot of TV. I do, too. Maybe I need to start watching some more of that good stuff. I watch a lot of ratchet stuff, but go ahead. That's neither here nor there. Go ahead.
I watch a lot of documentaries.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's what I like to watch.
Yeah, see, educational stuff.
Yeah,
I need to get more of that.
I was watching some good ones on Netflix, Dirty Money. Good ones. You should watch that stuff. It's pretty cool. But what do you have going on, man? You going to be with us next week on the show?
I will be around next week. I haven't been asked to be back. Are you asking me back?
I mean, I'm asking you back, but I know that you're real particular about getting paid and all of that
stuff. No, I just like to bother them because, maybe because they know I'll do it for free. Maybe that's why I haven't got paid.
You know,
maybe
when they know that you do things for free,
right.
Oh, man,
maybe
you get my arm and take
a
leg.
Are you going to pay me this time? I mean, I get it. You know, I like doing this. I know this is what I want to do. You helped me out a little bit, but it is 3 hours. You know, my day, I don't know. But who knows? But I'll come back. I don't know if I can do it next week. I have to check the schedule. Got to talk to my wife. But I am working out up here every day, getting treatment.
Maybe Monday.
Hanging out.
Maybe we can get you in here Monday.
Right off the weekend?
I'm just saying.
Maybe. I don't know.
Monday. And you'll be filling in for me.
With John?
With John.
For 3 hours?
3 hours.
Maybe. It's good. You know, I love John. You know, I actually met his brother last night, Paul.
Now, his brother is a judge?
I don't know how many brothers he has. This one is a manager at the convention center.
Ah, there you go, there you go.
So, got to meet him last night at an event doing it for the Punt Foundation was there. They received a check from the NFADA Foundation, which was pretty cool. So it was good meeting him, seeing his brother. It was good to see some cars, too. I'm actually in the market for a minivan. I'll be looking at minivans. So if anybody out there in the minivan world wants to hook a brother up, me and my wife will definitely come over, bring the kids, check some out, test drive them.
Wow.
I can tweet that I'm there or something.
I mean,
you know, hey.
are there some certain things that you would do to your minivan? Do you like them to go fast or anything like that? My uncle used to have a minivan. He put rims on it.
I would put rims on my minivan. I would, you know.
You gotta be a cool dad.
I mean, that's, you know, that's just how we grew up. Yeah, you gotta put rims on it. Is it rims on it? Chris Rock is spinning, man. It's spinning. You can't even see him spinning. Are my wheels spinning, man? And, you know, stop at the light with the minivan with the spinners on it.
Oh, man. That's funny. When we were young, we definitely had the minivan with the rims. Burgundy minivan, the only one with rims in the town. It was the best. So you knew it was us coming.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully we can get you in next week. It was fun today, man.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Went by fast.
It did go by fast. All right, well, we'll be back. At least I'll be back tomorrow. And we'd like to thank everybody that helped out. Production assistants J.J. Torito, George Blast, Jeff Koltenak, Thomas Hollander, producer Jay Harris. We'll be back tomorrow. It's the John Murphy Show, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.